We've got two members on the platform, yourself and Mr. Kaiso. Should we give it a few more minutes?
Yeah, let's give it about 2 more minutes and see. Thanks. Yeah.
All right.
Thank
No,
you.
I'm in Derry.
Okay.
Yes,
Yeah.
I said Mr. Kaiso is in.
Yes, I'm in.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Hi. How are you, Honorable Mlenzana? Honorable Mlenzana. Yeah, the corner now could have better deal. Mlenzana. Lindana. support staff, everybody on the platform. As you know, today the committee is meeting with the Department of Small Business Development. Let me take this opportunity to welcome the Honourable Minister, Minister Stella Ndabeni-Abrahams. Good morning, Minister, and welcome. The Deputy Minister, Honourable Sdungu Dlamini, DG, Mr. Lindokuhle Mkhumane, and the whole department on the platform, you are all welcome. We are looking forward to engaging with you as per our communication. Obviously, we are also having the Parliamentary Budget Office led by Dr. Tumsan Janshis, its director, who will also be making an input around the issue of small business development. It is a great pleasure for us to welcome the department. Darren, before we proceed, can you check the apologies that we are having?
Chairperson, yes, we received apologies from Mr. Mare, Mr. Matapa, and Ms. Dikgala.
Okay, can you please note those apologies? I think small business development has been identified as far as the economic reconstruction and recovery plan is concerned, that it's very critical for the reigniting of the economy. Again, it's also very important as far as allowing previously disadvantaged people to get into the economy. It's also very important as far as job creation is concerned. And Minister, we have never had an opportunity of interacting with your good self. We thought let's get you on a Friday and understand what is happening in the department, and as a committee see how we can help. It's a truism that all economies which are developing is because by and large of the contribution of small business. So the critical role of your department cannot be overemphasized. Thank you very much. Director PBO, we have always been interacting with you. You'll come in. I think we'll allow the department, I would say, let's give the department 45 minutes maximum. Minister, you can decide to take less than that. It's fine, but 45 minutes. And what will happen after that, then PBO will come in, and then the oral members will have an opportunity to interact with their presentations. You'll come back to respond to the issues that would have been raised by the honorable member. Honorable Minister, Stella Ndabeni-Abrahams, give an opportunity to you, then you decide who you call and when, but you are most welcome. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, sorry to interrupt, Chairperson.
Yes,
Chair, I've received an apology from Tim Lanzana. He's attending a funeral. So I just wanted to bring that to the attention of the committee. Mr. Mlenzana. That was Kaiso, Chairperson.
Oh, okay. So let's note Honorable Lindana's apology. Honorable Minister, please come in.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, and everyone who's attending this meeting in this platform. Let's first take this opportunity to thank the committee for inviting us to come and share this critical work that we do as the FCITED Chair. Of course, we have few specific programs that we do believe that by us implementing them,
Minister, can I interrupt you, please? Sorry for that. Yes, from one of you, I can take a piece. That's better.
How is that, Chair?
Yeah. Could I see one of
Ngifuna ukubona lonke iqhiya please.
Manhlalo.
Sini.
Okay. I think that's better. I just wanted to fix it. My apologies, colleagues, for the delay. I know you said we have 5 minutes, but I'm trying to make sure that the camera is.
Yep, yep. 45.
Thank you so much. So we'll be presenting the work that is done by ourselves in the portfolio, starting from CIFA, which is our funding institution, and CIDA, which support institution. The Director General of the department is here leading all the portfolio organizations as expected. They will take us through various programs, as I indicated earlier, that do give at least a bit of a relaxation to those that are beneficiaries and those that are intending to be beneficiaries. But what we always ask for, Chairperson, is that people must first read and try to understand the products that we have. Therefore, after they've read all the products, when they reach out, they must always make sure that they have the necessary documentation that we are requesting for. We have tried to relax the requirements, so there's no one that can say we've asked for ridiculous things. We've tried to tone down what we understand the constituency that we're working with, wherein we can assist through our institution that is CIDA, that provides the business development support. We're therefore able to assist those that need to be assisted. Chairperson, with your permission, please allow me to invite the Director General of the department to talk into details on the overview of the work that is being done. Thank you, Chair. DG, please come in.
Morning, Minister. Morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Lindo Wilson Kumane, the DG of the Department of Small Business Development. I must just indicate, Chair, that the CEOs are still struggling to get in, but I will start with the presentation so that we don't waste time. As the Minister said, we will be talking to the work that we are doing as a department as per the letter that was sent to the Minister. Chair, we do have two entities that are currently reporting to the Minister, the Small Enterprise Development Agency, as well as the Small Enterprise Finance Agency, which is CIFA. We'll start with the CIFA, the work that we are doing within the Small Enterprise Finance Agency, where we are trying to make sure that we do avail financial support to small businesses as well as cooperatives. We do have regional administrators, we do have offices, but for CIFA in particular, we don't have offices in each and every area. We are still working with the other entities, including CIDA, to make sure that there are co-location points that are established. We have these people who are assisting. We have regional administrators, also have investment analysts who are based in these regions. We have investment officers who are also responsible for due diligence, but also for basic assessments of the applications. And then we have these regional managers who make sure that what's supposed to happen in the region happens. Then we have this key program that we are driving. It was the first time that we have come up as government with a program that is entirely focused on township and rural enterprises. This is designed for those enterprises that are based in these areas, to assist them to grow, to also formalize those that are informal. But amongst other products or other sectors that we are supporting, these are the ones that are listed here, but we are not exclusive. So those that are not listed here, for example, people who are involved even in the funeral industries, we do support them. Those who are involved in the construction sector, we also support them. But we try to make sure that we do customize the support that we provide to these businesses that are based, especially those that are in township and rural areas. This is the financial package that we offer. What we are also pushing for, Chair, is to make sure that people start getting serious about running their businesses, but also the business management support is provided so that they are able to provide the services that they aim to provide as businesses, but also are able to pay back the money so that we are able to support those businesses that also need funding. So it's impossible for us to issue all the time 100% grants. That's why we support, we offer blended finance, of which it should be, it goes up to the maximum of 50% of the approved amount. So those are the examples that, for example, if we give you 100,000 rand, 50,000 rand is a loan, and 50,000 rand of that is a grant, as well as if it's a 1 million that we give you, the 900,000 is the loan, and then 100,000 will be a grant. So the grant goes up to a maximum of 100,000. Then the maximum period that you can pay the money is 60 months. But it also depends on the cash flow. So what we've done also is change the basis of granting of the loan. I know that most small businesses have been complaining that they don't have, for example, the collateral that is required. If you are borrowing from a bank, you need to have assets that can be taken against your loan. So what we've done is that we based our lending on cash flow. So it depends on the capacity of the business to pay back the money. So it doesn't matter whether you have assets, but we make sure that whatever business plan you submit, it must give us the confidence that you'll be able to pay back the money. Our interest rate is fixed at 5%. We do provide a moratorium of 6 months. We try to relax the eligibility criteria for the businesses that are based in townships and rural areas. It must be registered, obviously, with the CIPC, because we need to be able to account for the money that we advance to small businesses. It must be owned by South African nationals, but also we're saying at least 70% of the employees must be South Africans, obviously, because it's a township and rural entrepreneurship program. You must be based either in a township or rural areas. You must have a license, but if you don't have a business license, at least you must be willing, because we do facilitate that. We don't want you to be excluded from getting support because you don't have a license. So we make sure that we assist you with engaging with the municipalities to make sure that they issue licenses. What we've also ensured, Chair, is that the people must at least be registered with SARS and UIF. We discovered that, especially during the COVID pandemic time, when there was lockdown and businesses were closed, most of SMEs were not registered with UIF, which is very, very important, because it assists you to at least continue to pay your employees. So the money that most of the businesses were looking for during that period of the COVID pandemic is people who were looking for money to pay salaries, of which they could have avoided looking for this money if they had registered with UIF. The business bank account, obviously you need to have a business, but we also do assist in you in opening a business account if you don't have one. Chair, this is just a high level summary. I'm not going to go into details in terms of what we've done so far in terms of the impact, the money that we've given to various types of businesses. We've broken it down there. You see that the money that we've given to people who are running butcheries, people who are running open air foods, textile clothing sector, retail, personal care, spaza shops, also people who are involved in the automotive sector, because we know that it's one of the very vibrant businesses in the township and rural area. So we want to make sure that these businesses, at least they have the proper equipment to assist them to run formal businesses. Chair, this is just a breakdown in terms of the provinces. I'm not going to also go through each and every figure there, but we're just showing that we are trying to make sure that we spread the money that we have to all different provinces, especially those that have a high percentage of rural areas. We make sure that we do reach various districts, but also support especially women-owned enterprises, youth-owned enterprises. I must confess, Chair, that especially when it comes to people with disabilities, we still have a challenge in terms of the numbers there, but we are taking initiative to make sure that we are able to reach out to the sector so that we do support them. And then we have one critical instrument, Chair, that we came up with during the COVID pandemic, but it's proving to be a very important instrument going forward, because here what we are doing, we are resuscitating the manufacturing support program, especially in township, prioritizing township and rural areas, so that we are able as a country to get as many businesses that are based in rural areas, especially local businesses, to produce goods locally. We saw that during the pandemic, most countries closed the borders and they prioritized their local economies, so we're unable to get certain goods. Now we're trying to build this manufacturing capacity as a country. So this is a very critical program. Also, it is offered through blended finance. I must indicate that it's one of those popular schemes. It's always oversubscribed because there's quite a big demand from the private sector, from our small businesses to access this. We do provide also business development support. So we don't just give you equipment or machinery if you need it, but we also do assist you to comply, because when you are a business that is producing goods, the retailers will not take goods that do not meet certain standards. They do not meet a certain health standard. So we make sure that we assist you with business development support so that when you package your goods, the goods are acceptable in terms of quality, but also of safety. We do assist in terms of market access opportunities where we engage with the private sector and make sure that they do take up products that are produced by small businesses. We also prioritize these subsectors, Chair, which is include furniture manufacturing, chemical agro-processing. This is just an indication in terms of the approvals as well as the disbursements so far. We have approved up to 656 million. There is a breakdown in terms of the loan portion as well as the grant portion, supporting 78 SMMEs in the process, facilitating 3,156 jobs. This is a further breakdown in terms of the provinces where we've dispersed this money to various provinces. All nine provinces we've approved funding. Sorry, eight provinces except the Northern Cape we've approved funding for. We do have some challenges, Chair, that we think we need to also share with you. We had last year, the minister launched the Youth Challenge Fund, where we were trying to make sure that we have an instrument that is targeting businesses that are owned by young people. We still have issues where people submit incomplete or inadequate business plans. In some instances, they don't even have financial statements. They don't have cash flow projections. And just to indicate that cash flow projections are quite critical because they also show us whether you have the ability to pay back the money that we are giving you, your business will be successful, and the investment that is being made by the state, we do achieve results. Some, they do not even provide quotations, because how do we assist you with the purchasing of equipment if we don't even have quotations for that? SARS compliance, it's important because it becomes a challenge come the time of auditing when you are not compliant, and AG will ask, how did you fund this business if it's not even compliant with SARS? In some instances, those businesses that, for example, have lost, if you have lost your goods, maybe through flooding, or maybe the business bent down, if you don't have any affidavit, you don't have any policy statement, we cannot process that application. So we do have these challenges, Chair, that we are, but we are also, what we are doing here, we are not just dismissing these people, but we do refer them to CEDA, because CEDA, they have regional offices where people can go to and get support to be able to comply. We also do not fund those businesses where it's clear that you will not be able to pay back the money, because this is the taxpayers' money. We need to make sure that this money goes far and support other businesses that need funding. We still, the maximum amount that we can provide is 15 million. So if a business is beyond that, we do refer you to other entities, including NEF, as well as the IDC. We also do not fund those people who are not rehabilitated insolvents. At least you must have entered into an agreement to pay back the money that you owe to other creditors. We also do not fund speculative property development. Sometimes applications that go through CEDA, there's always the expectation that definitely if CEDA has assisted you with a business, then CIFA must fund that. But it must be clarified that CIFA also has to use its own criteria and make sure that these businesses are viable. So it's not always guaranteed that the business plans that are produced through CIDA will be funded through CIFA. Chair, we do have these challenges when people submit applications that are not viable. If there is no market viability, the business concept is not viable, because sometimes there's this expectation, Chair, that if you submit a business plan to a government entity, they have to fund you. But as a government entity, we're also aligned to the National Credit Act, which we have to abide by. So we need to make sure that we don't do reckless lending. So those are the things that we have to look out for in the business plan or the applications that are submitted by the applicant. So we make sure that we have businesses that are properly packaged. The entity have been pushed to the limits in the past few years because in instances where we have challenges, where we had challenges in KZN, for example, we always expect the entities to respond. So even though they have their daily work where they entertain applications from various applicants, but we always ask them, you know, to go out of their way to come up with new instruments that are going to respond. For example, COVID-19, CIFA, they stepped up and came up with the SME relief program, which even though it took a little bit of time for money to be dispersed, but it was successful. Business recovery program after the July 2021 violent riots, these entities were able to come with instruments that are responsive to those challenges. But in that process, Chair, we were not able to get additional capacity to assist these entities to implement this. And so it's the same people who are responsible for day-to-day work at these entities who are also able to respond and support, you know, businesses because of this emergency. We must indicate, Chair, that even though CIFA, in terms of capacity, we have not seen any growth in terms of human resources, but they've just done quite a lot of work. They were processing money that running into millions, but now they are processing applications that run into billions. So it is a challenge that we do have that we want to assist as many businesses as possible, but in terms of resources, we still don't have, you know, additional resources to assist the entities. So CIFA has also come up with some solutions to some of the challenges. We make sure that we work, CIDA and CIFA, they work closely together, especially in preparing applications for adjudication by CIFA. So the pre-investment is very critical so that these businesses are ready for funding, but also the collaboration with various sectors, including incubators, LED officers in the municipalities, even the private sector, because we do work closely with the private sector, given that they do have additional capacity that can assist us to deliver on our mandate. We do have these sessions where we make sure that we reach out to the customers so that people know upfront in terms of the criteria, what needs to be done if you want to package an application for CIDA. We're also ensuring that we increase due diligence capacity at the back office, and also increase investment in automation, because it doesn't help us if entities still have to, the applicants in particular, still have to package application, take these applications physically to the offices, you know, of CIFA or CIDA. We do try to make sure that the automation processes are implemented to make the process quicker. CIFA has implemented this loan origination system, which is designed just for applications that are below 1 million. We implemented this intervention, and I think as we are piloting it, we'll see, you know, whether we'll be able to scale it, because it assists a lot, because it also gives power to the people who are applicants. They are able to see their application, where it's at. They also get a notification in terms of if there's a document that is missing, an IT document that has not been uploaded, they will get that notification so that they are able to upload. So it also gives power to the applicant to monitor the progress in terms of their application. Chair, Chair, with your permission, if I can request the CEO of CEDA, he's here on the platform, to just take us through quickly the on the CEDA work that they are doing. Thank you, Chair.
Perfect.
Good morning, Chair, and the members. I hope I'm audible. I've got low sounding, so, but I'm hoping I'm good. This is Nkosi Nambata. I am the acting CEO of CEDA. I will just take you through our provincial network. CEDA has 54 branches across the country that are responsible for delivering services to the SMEs. We also have our branches, they vary. We've got about 9 also provincial offices over and above the branches. This is just this depicts the structure of how our branches look like. They range from a large branch to a small branch plus satellite offices that we sometimes run with different municipalities and other partners. In a bigger branch, just a summary, you'll find that we'll have 12 staff members, with 7 of those being the key employees in terms of providing the business advisory work. And with the smallest branch, we'll have about 8 staff members, and satellite branch will have about 4 staff members. Did you? Right. We also, over and above the 54 branches that we have, and the conducting teams that we also have, we are implementing a new strategy where we want to have 180 additional touch points over the next 2 years. Eight of those we're looking at rolling out in the current financial year. This is a strategy to make sure that CEDA or SMEs in the rural outskirts of the country, as well as townships, are able to reach out and are able to find CEDA offices and have to spend a lot of money to try to get into the nearest towns for them to be able to access our services as CEDA. But we are also planning that together, these will utilize together with our sister entity, CEFA, so that both the services are available to the SMEs. So we'll be establishing these. These will not be offices, as in brick and mortar. This is where we'll be using local accountants in those rural towns and townships, to train them so that they're able to offer our services, the basic services like CIPC registrations, you know, your business plans and so forth, so that SMEs don't have to travel large distances. We use the National Space Agency to map our offices, and we realize that some of our offices were as far as 150 kilometers away from the densely populated areas. And we said we need to bring that access closer to within a 50 kilometer radius. So we use that scientific knowledge to come up with this. So we believe that it will help the portfolio to be reachable as well, because where they speed it, anything, the department is there and CIFA is there. This slide depicts the services that we offer. So CIFA offers a lot of business development support, that's what we call it. Because we are developing SMEs to be able to become better entrepreneurs. We do that through helping them to access markets. So we do local exhibitions where we pay for them to do that, and they're able to sell their products, where we do things like your pop-up markets in the different malls, and then we invite our SMEs in our portfolio to come and exhibit and sell their product. We also link them to supplier development with various private sectors. We also embark on what we call international trade missions, This is where we take local foreign countries. Last year we did most Africa due to the limitations of COVID, where we were around Uganda, Kenya, and other different countries. They take their locally produced products as part of us our local our exports to focus their products there. And see if we're able to then get a contract. So we get invited to different events that has SMEs where they're able then to showcase their products and some sell, some actually whatever stock they take, they sell it there and start negotiating for export opportunities. So that's a great initiative. Then also we then offer export compliance support. This is where we make sure that their products then and they're ready, but also that they comply with the rules and regulations of the different markets across the world. We also run a program called She Trades under this banner, where we is targeting women-owned businesses to be able to export their products. So we're looking at that. We are busy. We listed the women-owned SMEs, but also we are busy then assessing those businesses to see what compliance or quality standards do they need on their products to meet the eligibility criteria. We then have access to the program that we call Access to Finance, where we do business pitching, where SMEs are invited to pitch for funding. So then we're able to refer them to other financial institutions, but also we help them to perfect their craft and train them on how to do pitching for their business plan and what needs to be there so that they're able to access funding. We help them with applications for funding to various DFIs, including our sister company, SIFA. We also help them with the study for the work that they need to be doing in terms of their businesses. We also offer business management training. They vary. They start from business startup training to concentrate cost improvement training, productivity improvement training, and so forth. We also offer other business development interventions, which includes your business mentorship and coaching. Some are longer, 10-month, 12-month programs. Some are 6 months, some are 3 months, depending on the client level of maturity. And then we also offer what we call technology support program. This is the grant that we have for smaller businesses so that they're able to get equipment to start their businesses or to improve productivity or to help them with compliance. And that program is up to 1.2 million rand per client, and we're able to buy them equipment on the ground and start for their concept. Then we then have what we call incubation, which is today running one of the biggest incubation in the continent. We had at the end of the year, we had 110 incubators that CEDA was supporting and responsible for. That means we provide them with operating costs, and then they're able to take in SMEs, take them through CEDA programs, including mentorship and coaching, but also those in the technology space. They're able to do their designs there. They're able to prove their concepts there and so forth. And those programs are 3 years, but SMEs that are ready then graduate earlier, but they're in those programs for 3 years. This helps us make sure that we have sustainable businesses within this country, because after this training, then SMEs are able to run their businesses. Typically, they learn all the do's and don'ts within that institution program. We are expanding that program to look into other areas within the country, but currently we've got 110 incubators. Then we support other sectors. This is going to be an exhaustive list, but these are the main sectors that are within the portfolio, but we support all businesses that are available within the country. This is just the impact of our support over the years. We thought we should show Chair what we've done from the jobs. I won't read word by word, but that's the number of jobs that we've been able to create draw programs over the years, with the last column just showing quarter one, work that is done in quarter one, but the other columns showing what we've done over the years and the number of jobs that we've been able to help through our different programs, coaching mentorship, quality standards, quality improvements, you know, productivity improvement, export, that we've been able to sustain over the years, and the SMEs that we've helped turnover increase teaching. This chair talks to the work that we are doing on the flood relief in KZN. So we have been able to do some work. We didn't have much of a budget. We had a small budget of 50 million to assist the communities that were impacted by the floods. At the time of writing this report, we were sitting at 44 million approval. But I can say that as of 2 days ago, we had finished the whole 50 million, so we are not doing approvals anymore. We are focusing now on making sure that we are paying. So we are creating purchase orders at this point in time, so then we are able to buy the SMMEs equipment. This was one of the main SMMEs that were impacted by the floods. We are then starting to pay on because of the 10 million. So we are starting to pay for that, but we are planning that by October we would have finished making payments across the two cities. At the time of the report, we have been able to, through these approvals, we're going to save 1,206 jobs if we pay and the equipment is delivered to these clients, but the number has still increased since the last approval. Did you? This is more of the number of enterprises in terms of performance success that we've been able to reach out over the years as an organization. As it's been in the previous slide, this reflects on quarter one performance, and then it's the past 3 years' work that we've been able to do. Where we do entrepreneurship awareness, this is where we take the community through what opportunities are available, how to build their SARS, how to do their business plans, how to grant their businesses, how to keep financials. It's a lot of work that we do around that. So we do webinars. Given COVID, before we used to do physical work, since COVID, then we've been able to move on to virtual platforms, and we're able to do these webinars and take SMEs through. Seems to be a good program because SMEs do want to have information and also to know where to apply, how, and so forth. So we run those. These ones are other normal SMEs that we've supported through the period, excluding the TREP. On the township or enterprises, last year we were able to reach up to 1,457 township and rural businesses. And in the first quarter of this year, we've done 800 and 873 teaching. We had a lot of, I won't go to all the details, Chair, in terms of the challenges, but when we started the Township and Rural Enterprise Program, we realized that most of the informal businesses were not ready for formalization. And actually, some don't even want to be formalized businesses, but unfortunately, for the SMEs to access the services within the portfolio, both CEDA and CIFA, those SMEs then need to be formalized so that we are able to account for the taxpayers' money. But also, they were not even aware of the additional cost that comes with that. But as CEDA, we then change our programs to make sure that we support these businesses through paying for their CIPC registrations. We're not doing that before, but after this, then we improved and changed our processes to make sure that at least we pay for such things. We also have issues like municipal bylaws, which are quite a big problem, but the department is working on that through the red tape reduction, where you find that it's difficult for us to verify, even look at the permits that are issued. But we're able to assist the small or the informal businesses because they vary across the provinces, but also there's delays in issuing permits, and also in some provinces it costs more than other provinces. And sometimes you realize that an informal trader who makes 3,000 rand a month in some of the provinces, they're expected to pay away. I mean, if you look at the informal trading space, the amount that they make per week and per month is very small. And them then being charged for premises at 500 rand, it's a lot of money for them. But the DSP, the department, is working hard on making sure that those issues are addressed. We also had an issue, I think the DT alluded to this, where before we didn't have a system for administrative program for application, but SIPA has since developed an application that we are now all using together to feed through these applications. That led to some risk for the entities, but now all that is under control. We also had some issues as far as the shops and access to our programs, because we're using NetBank and Standard Bank branches to do that. And in some areas, that was not there. We're currently looking at other partners to be able to implement and run this program. The ESOS capacity comes up again at CEDA, because we still, because of the pending merger between the two entities, we're still running with the same capacity that we had before we introduced the number of programs that we introduced during COVID and after COVID help these businesses. So everything has moved to be abnormal, but we're still running with the normal headcount. Yet we've increased the number of the interventions that we are providing to clients. Obviously, this leads to a little bit of complaints from the clients or delays in terms of service. But those are the matters that we're looking at. We're employing temps to increase our branch capacities, to augment the issue of the capacity, and also graduates, you know, to be able to help us execute the mandate, because the mandate is even much more bigger in terms of saving SMEs post COVID. DG, that's what I'll highlight on this slide. I've talked about the issue of accessibility before. I've also touched on the issue of the pending merger, which obviously limits in terms of us in terms of employing in terms of up to 24 months until the merger is done, and that causes problems, Chair, because we find that when people are employed on 24 months and they get permanent contracts and they leave. But we are managing that situation very closely. See, there was also the challenge of executive positions that were not filled over 2 years now, where most of the senior managers then were asked to act, but the minister approved that we must fill in these vacancies on a contract basis so that we're able to operate as an organization. I think this one is just what we've been able to make sure that SMEs remain sustainable. I spoke about access to international markets. This is just on a quarter one, access to international markets, the business assistance program that I spoke about, quality improvement that we've done for various SMEs, and training and mentorship, where you see that we reached out to 4,102 SMEs within the quarter one of this financial year, and the other numbers depict what we've been able to achieve within the quarter. That would be all, Chair. Thank you very much. Thanks, DG.
DG, are we done?
Yes, Chair. That was the end of the presentation we submit. Thank you.
Thank you so much, DG. May I request PBO Director Dr. Francis to come in?
Thank you so much, sir. Can you hear me, sir?
Very well, thank you.
All right, thank you so much. Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, ministers and colleagues on the platform. Thank you so much, Chair, for the opportunity for the Parliamentary Budget Office to provide input in this regard. I am with the PBO team on the platform. Dr. Amelia Olandi, Mr. Chair Pongoloi, will take the committee through the office presentation this morning. I think it is aimed to provide the committee the status of the work we are doing with the economic recovery construction plan, which really links with the MTSF and national development plan, particularly the priority two, critical solution and the job creation, and also look at the debt guarantee method that's seen in the past 2 years. Before I give Melia and Sepo check the numbers, I'm going to give you inputs, comments, open the marks, and then I'll give them to Chairperson. I think, Chair, I want to start by really emphasizing that it is important to know that government provides for right support to this, as we've seen the collective department that has highlighted that, with particular focus on the sector, small, micro, and medium enterprises as well. Given the evidence that the small, micro, medium enterprises in developing countries create more employment than their large counterparts, it's important to emphasize that they require both supply and demand side support. I'll just give my comment around two areas. Firstly, around tax policy. Government use tax policy and various tax policy measures to support businesses, and there are specific tax regimes that are meant for small, micro, and medium enterprises that really focus on the sector. And this, in our research, has been working in many senses. However, in our recent analysis and research from tax policy, that this is highlighted to raise some incoming concerns around tax policy design meant to support the sector. One point around the fact that despite these tax incentives, tax concessions to the sector remains or continues to incur higher tax liability compared to the large counterparts. When you look at the actual tax they actually end up paying, which is effective tax rate as a method to measure that. And due to in part compliance costs and lack of capacity to really some of these players in the sector to enjoy these benefits. The second point is around that in our June tax brief earlier, we raised concerns that despite the continued implementation of the implement tax incentive scheme over the years, the real impact and benefits remains of debatable or doubtful. And our analysis really, within the sector in particular, analysis really shows that generally the employment tax incentives has had little to no effect on creating jobs for youth within the sector itself. But at least one thing that we've noted is that the evidence does show that the employment tax incentive scheme positively impacts the business profitability within the sector. Coming back to government procurement, I think the point here is around the demand side, and we want to emphasize that government procurement plays an important role in supporting sector. Therefore, this space has been protected and ensure that government procurement policy continue to best within this regard. We therefore recommend that the government continue to update the committee on the developments around the public procurement reforms, as this will have direct impact on the development support of sector and broadly the aspiration of our economy. Earlier in this year, Chair and members raised concerns that the February 16th, 2022 consumer confidence in relation to 2017 WCFA should not use, or at least should lead to perception that it used to deter government from fulfilling the constitutional requirement of ensuring that there remains a national procurement framework in support of the sector in particular. In the view of the government drafted framework subsequent to the ruling, we raised various concerns which were also put out to the committee when thinking about support to the sector and small micro medium enterprises. Two or three of them, it's about issues around the segmented procurement framework will delay realization of national economic policies like the industrial policy and other development policy affecting the sector. Due to lack of capacity and capability, many organs of state always rely on the procedure procurement systems to scale the domestic finance. This principle has to be protected in the form framework in this regard. The question which organs of state have all approached the provincial procurement is a divergence to fall from international norms, and this would disadvantage a small number of enterprises. Therefore, this is addressed as well. The omission of local content and content local content and local procurement and content in the drafted framework may have far-reaching implications for industrialization and economy, and is likely to impact more on the small micro enterprises world and compared to the large ones. But the last point around the omitting local content may lead to a space exporting imported goods instead of domestic produced goods. And this again will really impact heavily on the small micro and medium enterprises. Chair, members, a few comments. I'll just give to Melia and Secretary of State for that. Thanks so much, colleagues. Thank you.
Thank you. We can start on slide 4, Tepu. Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and members and guests. I will take you through the first part of the presentation and then I will hand over to my colleague, Tepu. So we were asked to respond to the impact of government support interventions to businesses to mitigate the effect of the COVID-19 pandemic. The first response of government was in terms of the economic reconstruction and recovery plan, of which the objectives are to create jobs, to re-industrialize our economy, focusing on growing small businesses, which is also the focus of today's presentation, to accelerate economic reforms, to unlock investment and growth, to fight crime and corruption, and to improve the capacity of the state. Next slide. So the reason for focusing on growing small businesses are that of the more than 2.6 million SMMEs, 66.9% are classified as informal, 28.9% are classified as formal, 74.8% formal SMMEs are black-owned or were black-owned in 2020. Employment in all SMMEs expanded from 9.6 million jobs in 2016 to 11.8 million in 2019, which is an increase of 22% in just over 3 years. Industries in South Africa and South African formal business sector generated 10.5 trillion in total turnover in the 2019 financial year. A breakdown of this turnover by business size shows that small businesses generated 2.3 trillion or 22% of the 10.5 trillion and medium-sized businesses contributed 10%. Next slide. The interventions committed to in the Economic Reconstruction and Recovery Plan are the review and integration of government support for formal and informal SMMEs, startups and cooperatives, including removing red tape and reducing timeframes for relevant licenses and permits to improve the ease of doing business, designing more appropriate financing products and support to SMMEs to participate in localization opportunities. All of these interventions are linked to the vision of our country set in the NDP. It is therefore expected that the institutions responsible for these interventions demonstrate that their actions, expenditure, and outputs are aligned to these interventions and are monitored and can also be monitored by oversight bodies such as Parliament. Next slide. The Department of Small Business. So in response to the Economic Reconstruction Plan, revisions were made to the budget of the Department of Small Business to ensure that SMMEs contribute to inclusive economic growth and job creation. So the department increased the total budget by 22.9% in the period from 2018 to 2021. Transfers increased by 25% over the same period. And the department further transfer funds to the Small Enterprise Development Agency, as well as the Small Enterprise Finance Agency, which we just had the presentation on in a lot of detail. Next slide. So in terms of the revisions of the support to SMMEs, the department reviewed the outputs and reduced it from 52 in 2020 to 15 in 2021. This is now the outputs and indicators that are reflected in the APP. A key set of outputs are in the table below. So due to the review process, no historic information is available, but we've just seen that information is actually available. It's just not presented in the budget documentation. In addition to the outputs in the table, three districts were assisted through the red tape reduction action plan in 2021, and an assessment review of SMME's regulatory impediments to reform was also done in 2021. This links to the interventions to remove red tape. Indicators are, however, not developed to measure the reduction of time frames for relevant licenses and permits to improve the ease of doing business. That is actually what is required that we want to know and do oversight over in terms of the economic reconstruction plan. It is also not sure if the indicator to measure the number of products produced and services rendered by SMEs and cooperatives linked to markets, if this is the indicator that we must use to measure localization and support to labor-intensive industries. If not, it's not possible to measure this important intervention by the department. So if this is the information that we receive on a quarterly basis or on an annual basis during the standard processes, Parliament won't be able to monitor specifically in terms of the performance on localization and the interventions that is required by the ERRP. Several reports are developed for the executive on supported SMMEs and cooperatives, which are not published. These reports might also include the inputs of the public entities. So we've just seen that the department provided a lot of detailed information, which we don't have access to. It might be in the reports that they produced to the executive, but it's not published. So oversight bodies and the public don't have access to basically monitor the performance. Next slide. So in terms of the responsibility of the Department of Small Business Development towards the medium-term strategic framework is to reduce the concentration in monopolies and to expand the small business sector to contribute 50% to GDP. We've lately done analysis or progress reports on all the priorities. And in terms of the progress that we can find through the APP reporting, what we can find in terms of the number of competitive small businesses, we could find an indicator that shows that township and rural enterprises were supported by 694 million rand. It is not sure if this support is just financial support or whether it also includes non-financial support. In terms of the 50% of national and provincial financing dedicated to SMMEs and cooperatives, we could find the output that reflects or performance report that indicated a report on access to affordable financing for SMMEs and appropriate annual targets work was submitted. But this, we don't have access to this report, so we don't know the numbers, whether 50% had access to finance. The incubation support program were evaluated and conducted and approved by EXCO. Again, it's a report that went to EXCO and it's not available, or the outcomes that are presented in this report are not available to oversight bodies. In terms of the localization, we indicated that there's not a specific indicator that we can use to monitor the localization interventions, and it's also not in the APP of the department. Further progress on the MTEC indicates that 5,000 startups for youth businesses were supported financially and non-financially. Next slide. So members, the main transfers by the Department of Small Business Development are to the Small Enterprise Development Agency. In 2021, they received 838.5 million. They also transferred to the Small Enterprise Finance Agency, 1.4 billion in 2021. The table shows the breakdown of the allocations. You can see the biggest amount in 2021 was 666 million that were appropriated for small enterprise development, and that budget continues over the medium term. In terms of the transfer to Small Enterprise Finance Agency in 2020, an amount of 1.15 were appropriated for the COVID-19 Emergency Relief Fund. And that money has now been allocated for township and rural entrepreneurship to the Rural Entrepreneurship Fund from 2021 onwards. Next slide. So members, the key outputs to measure performance of the Small Enterprise Development Agency, these are the numbers that were submitted in the budget documentation. So you will see there's no historic information, although the department that, or the entity just presented that the historic information to us. But if we can just look at two of these indicators, the number of SMMEs and cooperatives listed to supply wholesalers and retailers, the perception is that that indicator is used to measure the link to localization. And then the next one, the number of SMMEs and cooperatives exposed to international markets, that one is also a duplication in the entity, which the department also indicated that they also report on that, but that was also a different number reported by the department, which might include other outputs as well from the department. Next slide. Performance of Small Enterprise Financing Agency. They also receive funding from the Department of Small Business, as well as from the Department of Trade and Industry and Competition. The impact of the COVID-19 Emergency Relief Fund of 1.2 billion in 2020 is not really visible in the table below. This table is published in the budget documentation. So as you can see, you don't really see even the amount reflected in 2020. You see an additional amount or increased amount reflected in 2021, where the funding was actually now moved for township and rural entrepreneurship. The impact can be seen in 2021, 22, but not over the medium term. So members, in the first row, you will see the value of the financing 2.1, the value of financing disbursed to SMMEs and cooperatives 2.7 billion in 2021-22. And you can also see the number of SMMEs and cooperative finance increased quite a lot from 2020. It's 191,000 SMMEs and cooperatives that were financed. And the number of jobs created were reflected 207, which is almost more than double than the 99,000 that was reported in 2020. But then over the medium term, those numbers does not reflect, or it actually decreased to the numbers before 2020-21. So I'm not sure if the department must still update the numbers, but the financing is there, but it's not on the table. So we are now on slide 12. I've just presented slide 12. Now we can move to slide 13. Thank you, honorable members. That was my part of the presentation. I will hand over to Tsepo.
Thank you very much, Nelia. Chairperson, honorable members, am I audible?
Yes, you are audible. Quite so.
Thank you very much. So, honorable members, I'll be taking you through the slides on the credit loan guarantee scheme, as well as the business bounce back scheme that was launched by government in 2020 and subsequently in 2022. In terms of the COVID-19 loan guarantee scheme, just to give a bit of context, you'd recall that the South African economy declined by around about 6.4% in 2020 as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. And this was certainly the worst recession that the country has ever seen. Now, it was small and medium enterprises that constitute around about 90% of formal businesses and contribute about 34% of GDP that were the hardest hit. And this happens at the same time where we also saw consumer spending and business revenues falling quite sharply, and the livelihoods of around about 60% of businesses were threatened. In response to this tragedy, government then took a decision to launch what was then known as the COVID-19 loan guarantee scheme of around about 200 billion. And this also formed part of government's broader 500 billion economic relief package. So the loan guarantee scheme was administered in partnership with commercial banks. So it was National Treasury, the Reserve Bank, in partnership with commercial banks in order to provide emergency and distress relief loans to struggling businesses. However, in the implementation of the scheme proved to be a failure with a minimal take-up and only a small proportion of the total loans dispersed. The figure was around about 13.4 billion of the available funds that were dispersed. Now, given the slow uptake and the flaws in the scheme's design, a decision was then taken to revise the terms of the loan. And on the 26th of July, the National Treasury, in partnership with the bank, as well as the Banking Association of South Africa, announced various changes to the scheme in order to make the funds more available to the public. Now, despite these improvements to the scheme, there was still no significant uptake in the loans, with only around about 18.2 billion of the 200 billion being dispersed. Now, based on the lessons that were derived from the failure of the 2020 loan guarantee scheme, a decision was then taken to then relaunch the scheme to revise the terms. And on the 25th of April, National Treasury announced what is now known as the Business Bounce Back Support Scheme. I think the main difference between this scheme and the COVID-19 scheme is that with this particular scheme, it also now goes further to support businesses beyond COVID-19. It also seeks to support businesses that were hard hit by the July civil unrest as well as the floods in KwaZulu-Natal. Now, some of the reasons why the initial scheme failed is the mere fact that we saw that many distressed businesses were simply reluctant to assume more debt, given, which is understandable, given the uncertainty around their incomes, especially during a time of COVID-19. We specifically think that we could attribute it also to the lack of the transformation of the financial sector, or more broadly, the failure of the sector to understand the SMME landscape in South Africa. So for instance, banks still insistent on personal surety from business owners before granting them the loans. And this was despite the mere fact that the loans themselves were government guaranteed. Another factor is the mere fact that the banks did not have, or our assessment is that the banks did not have an incentive to disperse the loans, given that they could not profit significantly from those loans. So they could only make a small margin on the loans, and these small margins were used to provide funding for losses. We also are of the view that the scheme was poorly advertised, specifically not reaching businesses that are operating in the township, rural, and informal sectors of the South African economy. There were also issues around the scheme's design in terms of flaws there, specifically as it relates to its inability to address the requirements as it relates to the easing of the creditworthiness assessments. But other people also flagged the issue around the slow and delayed processing of loan applications. I think another factor worth mentioning is the timing of the scheme. So you'd recall that government and the banks negotiated the terms of the scheme and launched it during the time where the country was already 6 weeks into lockdown. I would assume that a number of businesses would have sought alternative means to accessing financing during this period. Then briefly, in terms of the bounce back scheme, I did mention that it goes further in terms of providing supports to businesses that were also affected by the July civil unrest and the floods in KwaZulu-Natal. Now, National Treasury says that they also see this as a program that also seeks to contribute towards the growth of the South African economy, but also help in terms of facilitating job creation. Relative to the COVID-19 relief scheme, loan guarantee scheme, which was 200 billion, this new scheme is only run about 15 billion and also has a smaller equity-linked mechanism of run about 5 billion that the National Treasury is yet to provide further details on. And I think the MTBPS should provide more details on that. Another distinct feature is the mere fact that with the initial COVID-19 loan guarantee scheme, it was simply just the National Treasury, the Reserve Bank working with the banks. Now, following the amendment to the terms of the scheme, a decision was taken to say that perhaps there's a role to be played by development finance institutions, as well as non-bank small and medium enterprise finance providers. And I think it's also worth mentioning that with the previous scheme, it seemed as if the banking sector was taking much of the losses in terms of the scheme. With the new scheme, government and the lenders are sharing the risk in terms of the non-payment of these loans, with government taking the first 20.5% of the losses. So we also did a bit of research to see what are some of the international experiences of similar schemes abroad. And what we found is that about 51 countries have implemented some sort of bank loan scheme to date. And generally, these schemes have fallen short of the targets worldwide. And owing to some of the issues that are mentioned around the flaws in the scheme's design and the administrative problems. And as a result, South Africa is no exception in this regard. And what we also find is that the rate of growth seems to be tempered over time. And this is despite the mere fact that even these schemes themselves have also implemented changes to their own schemes. Our research also further shows that generally where we see the success of schemes, there seems to be directly related to the degree of risk transferred out of the banking system and onto national government's balance sheets. And where there's changes to the schemes being made, generally the themes that we see is that a number of governments would have increased the extent of the government guarantee to run about 100%. There would be prescribing credit rating processes to limit the number of rejection rates. This is also something that came out quite often in the South African case, where a number of small businesses did mention that their applications were rejected without being given constant feedback about why they were rejected. A number of countries also tried to lower interest rates, in some cases even offering some of these loans at an interest-free rate. But more importantly is that we also seen that development financial institutions also seem to play quite a significant role or critical role in terms of credit extension to businesses. The next set of slides, Chairperson, just looks at what we term key areas of oversight for consideration, specifically for the bounce back scheme, but one may argue perhaps also relate to the broader financial SMME financing landscape in South Africa. So in our assessment, we argue that under the new scheme, the banks, the DFI institutions, the non-bank SMMEs themselves still have sole discretion of which businesses can access finances. We believe that this has got significant implications. The first implication is that we do know that financial institutions are inherently adverse towards SMMEs, and this is despite the mere fact that SMMEs still contribute quite significantly towards global banking revenues, but yet they do not receive much credit extension from the sector. The second implication would be the mere fact that we believe that it's got the potential to entrench what we deem as the misallocation of capital phenomenon in the South African economy. This essentially speaks to the mere fact that it perpetuates this trend where we see the constant financing of large enterprises and sectors such as mining, utilities, professional services at the expense of small and medium enterprise, specifically in sectors such as manufacturing, which we believe that are quite key in terms of creating the jobs that the economy so needs. Thirdly, would be the financialization of the South African economy and more broadly, the global economy, which continues to allow financial institutions to remain profitable without investing in the real economy. And by doing so, it's a situation where we see financial institutions investing in the financial markets, in the stock markets, buying things such as derivatives and not pumping money back into the economy in order to stimulate growth. Our assessment is also that the new scheme is also still implemented through a financial system architecture that's not suitable for the informal township and rural nature of many of the SMMEs in the country. Now, yes, Chair.
Please, can you gravitate towards the end of the presentation so that we allow members to come in? Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Chair. So, as I was saying that, for example, the scheme also lacks a transformation mandate as provided for by the Financial Services Charter, and thus would also be in line with the Economic Reconstruction and Recovery Plan's objective of facilitating economic transformation and empowerment. Our assessment is also the mere fact that I think that we note that the inconsistent policy environment, things such as load shedding and as well as the weak macroeconomic environment will continue to hurt small businesses and also discourage them from incurring further debt. We worry about the timing of this type of assistance, which we believe that timing is also critical to its impact. We worry that the scheme may be a little bit too late, given that the number of businesses that have already failed, particularly in the tourism and services sector. Now, given the scheme's poor track record, there seems to be low appetite amongst major banks to participate in the scheme. So, for instance, at the time of launching the new scheme, we saw that only one major bank had fully opted to participate in the scheme. Chair, as I move quite swiftly, I think on this slide, the most important thing to highlight here is that we believe that the bounce back scheme, as with the credit loan guarantee scheme, is an attempt by the National Treasury to be seen as supporting small businesses and promoting job creation without having the expenditure on budget. And they've done so by simply creating a contingent liability on a financing scheme that we believe has proved to have poor uptake even in the midst of the pandemic. Then finally, in terms of the areas for oversight, we certainly are of the view that the bounce back scheme on its own will certainly not address the fundamental challenges, both financial and operational, that affect SMMEs in the country. And perhaps there's scope for also legislative reforms that may assist in this regard. And some of these reforms that are proposed in recent literature of SMME development in South Africa include, for example, looking at possibly amending the National Credit Regulations Act in order to lower the barriers that prevent SMMEs from operating personal bank accounts. This is important, especially for SMMEs operating in the informal economy. But also perhaps there's also scope to look at amending perhaps the PFMA and the MFMA in order to allow provincial and municipal pooled financing vehicles in order to support their own sort of SMME lending grant sort of equity style programs, which we believe are quite needed. Chairperson, in conclusion, just to link the bounce back scheme back to the Economic Reconstruction and Recovery Plan, the point to be made here is that we note that the COVID-19 loan guarantee scheme had a target of 200 billion. Meanwhile, the bounce back scheme only comprises of a loan of 15 billion plus the 5 billion that Treasury is yet to announce. Now, I think the question we all grapple with is the question of what does this mean for South Africa's economic recoveries, especially given that the 200 billion that was initially earmarked for small businesses is the largest plank, or rather constitutes the lion's share of government's initial 500 billion economic stimulus package. Certainly, in our view, I think the implications is that we do believe that the economic recovery will continue to lag. South Africa's economic recovery in particular will lag its global counterparts, who certainly have got scope to respond to shocks quite better. And we also believe that the economy will continue to be trapped in a low growth environment, further perpetuating higher unemployment, rising poverty, inequality, stagnating incomes, as well as leading to increased pressure in terms of government having to increase spending on public services and government borrowing. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Chair. Members, we'll stop here. The rest of the slides, two slides, talk about the trade industry. Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Sanchez and Mr. Moloi and Dr. Onelia from the PBO. You can take off your slide then. Thank you. Thank you very much from the team from Small Business Development and from PBO. Oral members, you know how we do it. I will take indications of oral members who would like to have input. Oral members, you know how we
Chair,
do it.
Chair, Honorable Sarupen.
Honorable Sarupen, good morning, Honorable Sarupen, how are you?
I'm good in yourself, Chair.
Perfect, thank you. Next, oral member. Honourable members?
Kaiso, Chair.
Honourable Kaiso, thank you. Honourable members? Anybody else? Members are just struggling with their connectivity. They are saying they're coming in and out, they are kicked out of the forum. So we'll recognize them as they come in. Let me allow Honorable Sarupen to make his contribution. Honorable Sarupen.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I'd like to thank the department for the presentation. I think it was quite useful in many aspects. And I note the various programs that they've been running, including small enterprise manufacturing supports, the township economy support, et cetera, et cetera. But Chair, what I'd like to get a full understanding on from the department is whether or not they're doing sufficient work in the value chain to ensure vertical integration. And what I mean by that is that are they actually going to bigger manufacturers, bigger businesses, and asking them what kind of businesses can you procure from locally, and what kind of businesses should we be incubating for you to be able to use them as suppliers? And actually starting at that point and saying what is actually something that you can procure locally competitively that we can then incubate. And if they're taking that approach, what success that has yielded. Thank you very much, Chair.
Honorable Sarupen, thank you. Honorable Kaiso. Honorable Kaiso.
Yes, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Can I switch off my video for
before we also lose you? Yeah.
Perfect. Yes, Chair, because the load shedding has caused havoc here. Honorable Chair, let me start by also thanking the minister and the head team for this presentation made before this committee. Indeed, there was a lot of information that would also assist us to can be able to measure to what level as a committee will be able to intervene. Now, yes, there are a number of points that one picks up from the presentation itself as it dealt with the small business support. So now, quite interesting, some of them, which also includes the issue of, you know, financing. And now, after that presentation and the PBO's presentation, I combined the understanding, drawing the line from these two presentation. I may not necessarily be referring to I will be specific on these two presentations at some stage, but at some stage I will just combine them as one understanding. Maybe if I'm to start, Honorable Chairperson, I just want to check because on the presentation there by the department, it is set a target of 70% of the SMMEs being Africans. I just have an interest, given the situation that we have in the country where we have other non-South African Africans, you know, so that we, maybe these percentages are not being, you know, is the department able to take out? Because when you throw your eyes around the country, you see there are also non-South Africans, Africans. So it is pressed by, you know, people with permit, etc. But I just want to know what percentage do South Africans actually, you know, occupy in this target? Or currently, what is the status quo? Because we might be referring to other non-South African Africans. And then I'm also having an interest to know from the department the participation of women in the small, medium enterprises participation, you know, the women, the disabled, and the young people. Yes. Somehow I've seen a 5,000 number of young people, but I wanted the department maybe to be specific because we also face, you remember that women face a particular type of a struggle of, you know, being sidelined economically, you know, do not have access to economic activity of the country. Much as men would be given these opportunities. and a bigger percentage of women are unemployed. And we also have a population of disabled, you know. So one would like to know, how does the small, medium enterprises embraces or these subgroupings that I've spoken about. So into the small, medium enterprises, you know, to recognize their contribution as these sectors. Now, the PBO, you talked about, you know, non-availability of information from the department itself so that you can be able to draw a particular or to go to a certain determination or to draw a certain line. But I'm not sure now whether is the department information classified or what. I didn't get what is the reason of not being able to access that, or is it just mere refusal, or is it classified information that you are unable to get into, maybe as per the policy of that department or what? Because my understanding is that that should be a public information at the end of the day. Now, on the issue of what the PBO presented, Honorable Chairperson, it kept on making reference to, you know, availability of support in terms of finance. and especially by the financial institutions, our banks, when an elaboration on the 200 billion guarantee scheme was being, you know, unpacked to before this committee. So we it also now points back to what we said earlier, that now the role of the financial institution has been very much, you know, awkward and non-supporting to these small medium enterprises. And this, Honorable Chair, it strengthens our case to make sure that at the end of the day we do have a state bank which shall be playing a very critical role in as far as, you know, making finance available to small medium enterprise at a lower interest rate at the end of the day. So it strengthens our case when we say there is a need really that there has to be a state bank that shall look into the interests of the small medium enterprises, because now the current dominant commercial bank would obviously look into where large capital can be invested in big corporations rather than looking at the small medium enterprises. So that would be the reason that why then the state would have to come in through other means, you know, institution of its own, which it owns and is able to assist. So I think that's the point that at the end of the day one would want to make, because one takes a cue from what happened post World War II, where we see a number of, you know, developed countries did to jack up their economy post the World War, and their some of their primary focus, for instance in Germany, was looking at the small medium enterprises, and which contributed largely to their growth of their economy, most of them where they are now, and where their economies have tried to stabilize. I'm just saying the importance of, you know, supporting the small medium enterprises, how it was important, even if you go back to the history of the post World War II. So so I'm just trying to make that point. Now, I think one would really support that particular point, because I think the PBO raises a quite important matter in as far as, you know, legislative reform is concerned. Because otherwise, if then there are constraints in as far as or imposed by these commercial banks, it means now to make things work flexible for the small medium enterprises, it would mean that there has to be a focus in as far as legislative reform is concerned, your MFMA, your PFMA, and other necessary, you know, regulations which needs to be flexible, so such that now the small medium enterprises are able to thrive even at the local municipality level. So a number of areas there at the local level has to, to reform to give it a space to can contribute towards the economy, and more especially in ensuring that the product that emerges or is being supplied at the level of SMMEs is that one of being a local product. So let me stop the Honorable Chair with my little contribution. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Kaiso. Honorable Peters, please come in.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks to the presenters. And quickly, Chairperson, I didn't say good morning. My questions are predominantly to the small business department. Chair, my issue is there is home industries, there is the street economy, there is the township economy, street economy being those people who sell what they would have produced in their kitchens or in their backyard at the street corners, also those who would go up very early in the mornings to the market to go and buy the things that they sell at the corners. And these people make money, and they then educate their children, keep the home fires burning. I just want to know, what support does this type of people get? And also those who do home industries. You would know the confectionery sector. There's quite a lot of people who would bake biscuits and cakes and whatever in their homes. And I also want to know what the department is doing with regard to the fact that big commercial companies like your Checkers and ShopRite, as well as Prosper, are literally taking the little monies from these street economy people and the home industries, because they are now doing buffet cakes. I mean, those things you would have thought they would, because they sell the flour, they sell the yeast, they sell the oil, and the fat that makes these fat cakes. Why do they then compete with the very people that are also sustaining their big businesses? Then I know that in Gauteng, the premier and the MEC of Economic Development launched in Soweto this township economy initiative. One would want to know how is the relationship with the department and the province, but also, is there any support that the province and the city is getting with regard to these initiatives? And I would know that it is not only Gauteng province, but many other provinces. The other thing that I want to know, is the department working with the Department of Trade and Industry and Competition to make sure that supplier development initiatives are in place to make it possible that big industries can procure from emerging suppliers? And what are they doing, these big commercial enterprises, in terms of enterprise development for these SMMEs? And then the other thing, is there a conscious effort in markets for locally produced goods, and especially those that are produced by SMMEs? But also, Chairperson, even if they are not able to reply at this particular moment, the innovation hubs, how many are there in the country? Do we have enough to supply to support the emerging suppliers? I heard Honorable Kaiso raised the issue with regard to women, youth, and people with disability. My question is only related to, is there positive funding? And if there is funding, how is it spread through the 9 provinces and the different municipal area? And through the district development model initiative, is there an intention with the champions of the district model, DMM, to make it possible that one of the focus is small business? And if it is not there, what is the department doing to make it possible that through the championships of the different ministers and deputy ministers in the DDMs, they are able to make sure that one of the key focus areas is SMMEs and small businesses, especially the street and township economy initiatives? Then lastly, Chairperson, There was a slide, I didn't see the number of that slide that was presented by PBO, which indicated that in the different years, the targets were not measured, and only in 2022, 2023 would it be measured, and because there would be figures or an indication on what needs to be achieved. So I would want to know, is it from the department, but both department and PBO, why was it not the targets not measured, or the, I don't know, let me say the numbers were not measured. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Peters. Honorable members, do I have any other member who may want to raise an issue? Let me check with Honorable Sarupen. Honorable Sarupen, are you covered?
And Sheikh Imam, Chairperson.
Honorable Sheikh Imam, please come in.
Chair, I'm covered. Yeah. It's Honorable Sarupen. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Sorry, I'm in my motor vehicle. I'm on my way to the airport. Chairperson, yeah, my questions, following questions. Number one, can the department tell us about the success and or failure rate? In other words, businesses that they've assisted, number one. And how many of them were able to pay back the monies that were loaned or advanced to them. So yeah, an idea of success and failure, that's the first thing. Second thing is this, are you engaging local government to be able to produce small business hub premises so that it can be made more feasible for small businesses to thrive? Thirdly, what other initiatives are you putting in place? And I want to give you a good example. I raised the other day that if we let every foreigner leave South Africa, you won't be able to have a haircut in South Africa. Now, are you considering some kind of initiatives in this field particularly? And I know you talk about personal care, although I don't know to what extent you're talking about personal care. But this is one ideal example where local people could be trained in becoming males, particularly becoming hairdressers and barbers and that kind of thing. Could you, what do you, I'll give you another example. I've just trained 33 girls, funded by myself, to do the beauty course and nail technician. Now, they would love to become small entrepreneurs on their own. What kind of assistance can you give them once they have qualified, got the experience as far as start-off? But more importantly, Chair, my observation is this. Giving monies is one thing. Remember, being a plumber and owning a plumbing business is two different things. What is the department is doing after you give them assistance to provide financial management skills, human resource management skills and things? And this ought to be an ongoing process to make them successful. Because people don't understand, and I'll give you a good example. If you gave somebody money to start up a spaza shop or whatever it is, people often don't understand that the money that you make on a daily basis is not the money for you to spend. You spend the profits and you take the capital and you put it back into the business. That does not happen. You find people going and buying cars and all that kind of thing. So I want to know, are you providing any further assistance to them in that regard? I'll stop there for now, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Sheikh Imam. Honorable Kaiso, do you have something you would like to add?
Chair, just only one thing. I've heard the department saying that they do not have sufficient budget. I just missed that point as to what happened to the budget as it is insufficient then. Yes, I didn't get the point quite well clear. What were the reasons that were being advanced there? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Oral Peters, anything?
Chair, my hand is up.
Oh, Honorable Jamin, sorry, I didn't. You know how we do it, I don't.
No, Chair, nothing from my side.
Okay. Honorable Jamin, please come in.
Thank you, Chair. I want to find out from the department, what are they doing in terms of, because the department is focusing on small business and giving support to small businesses. and that will feed to employment. But you are having this in between the rural towns that you can see unemployment is rife in those areas. What is the department doing to ensure that businesses is sustainable or giving output to employment within this communities and in building new industries in these communities? And then secondly, Chair, we had seen the department is giving out packages in terms of business support packages in Matatiel area. And some of the small businesses didn't even, was not even aware about this sort of relief that is coming in the area. What are the department doing to ensuring that all small businesses are catered for and help or relief are spread equally amongst businesses so that it doesn't become sort of what the EPW program is, it is today in supporting people with a certain membership card. So what is the department doing to ensuring that all small businesses are catered for and they know and equally what the help and relief that is coming their way in terms of from the department side? And then lastly, Chair, if the department can also just give us a breakdown in terms of how many Black-owned businesses and women-owned, youth-owned businesses have the department supported within this financial year. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Ntlangwini. Let me join the oral members. First, let me welcome the presentations made by both of the department, led by Honorable Minister Ndabeni Abrahams and PBO. As you can see, we've got so much interest in that in this department. Perhaps it comes from our understanding that most of the things that we are saying we want to do as far as the economy is concerned, as far as investment is concerned, as far as employment creation is concerned, those things can only happen if the small business sector is functioning and is efficient. As Honorable Kaiso was saying, that the economic history is littered with good examples of what happens to the economy when the sector is functioning and functioning efficiently. Hence our interest. Perhaps let me start. So the presentation is most welcome, and today I think my focus will be more on the department. PBO always interact with it, and thanks PBO for the insight. Let me start by saying that I was quite surprised at DG that you didn't talk about budget, its adequacy or not, or inadequacy. So perhaps just to come in there, I just want to check how big is your budget as a department, and comment around it. and then would also like to know how much of it did you spend in the last financial year? Any understanding coming from the department? As the committee in the past few months, we've been dealing with the allocations and appropriations which go to departments and find that departments don't spend money. But please, can you share with the committee? I was definitely expecting you to say something around the budget because I've got my own views. I think I'll say more about that later. that's one. Two, I just want to check
any collaboration with other departments? I heard when it comes to DFIs and so on, you did mention that you are working with them. But when we interact with other departments, they will tell us about their intervention as far as small business, BE companies, women-owned companies are concerned. So just want to check what type of collaboration are we having with other departments, for the DTIC, employment and labor. You know, there were issues, we had tariffs, for instance, from employment and labor, UIF, compensation fund, and so on. Please just share with us what your collaboration has been. acting CEO, you I think I see when you're talking about CIFA, you said you don't fund property development. What's the rationale behind that? Please share with us. I just want to check the perhaps it's related to what Robert Sarupen was raising. I may raise it differently. What do you see the role of the department apart from funding the advocacy role, championing the cause of small business? For instance, we always hear that government and agencies and SOEs don't pay small businesses on time. Government has come up with the policy of 30 days, and in most cases, that doesn't happen. What do you see your role as far as that is concerned, and what you've been doing? And what do you understand its impact to be in those businesses? When it comes to cash flow, we hear very sad stories of businesses who say government is a big contributor in our closing down as businesses. They give us business and they don't pay us. So that's where we are coming from, saying as far as the advocacy role is concerned. An interest in agriculture, any role that the business is playing, especially in new businesses. Cannabis, for instance, in some places where some of our ministers come from, they would know that this has been the business that have been run by black people. But when they come, when we interact with role players, they say, yes, it's there, but the barriers to entry, licenses and so on is too much for us to get involved. I just want to check whether there's any role that the department is playing and what is that role. let me throw in this one. What has been the impact of load shedding on small businesses? Again, still on advocacy role, I think Honorable Kaiser touched on this. As far as markets are concerned, but I'm particularly looking at government procurement. Is government procuring from small businesses, from local businesses? Because that's part of our ERP. This is part of local development. I'm saying, for instance, if you look at things like prisons, are they procuring from small businesses? If you look at hospitals, schools, and so on and so forth, are they, and do you see the department having a role to play there? Government gives out a lot of licenses, business licenses, to allow you to do certain things. For instance, let me say a gambling license, right? Those licenses are given out by government. And usually we are told that the conditions are very onerous. again, is there any role that the department is playing as far as that is concerned? Do you consider professional firms like lawyers firms, accountants, engineers, etc., are they part of your focus? Because in my dictionary, they're small business, and when you go in Sandton or you go to Cape Town and so on, for instance, you see big buildings of law firms, but what usually strikes me is none of those new law firms, it's Mukwena or Mombata or Chase. No, it's the old firms and so on. And when you say we're transforming the economy and we see that happening, it says there's something that we're not doing. But I'm just trying to check, do we see that as an area that should concern the small business department? Honourable Minister, there's a public procurement bill that has been spoken about. I don't know whether you have looked at it as the department, because for us, we are looking at this budget of about 2 trillion rand every year that Parliament passes, 6 trillion rand in the MTF. We're looking at that budget as also something that should assist us in transforming the economy, in helping small business, black business, women-owned business, rural businesses, and so on. I would like to check whether you have looked at it as the department and to see whether it does serve the interest of your constituents, that is the small businesses, as it were. I think let me leave it at that, and I'll allow you, Minister, to come in again like you did. You come in, you refer to the department, the DG, and so on. But back to you, you only bring back the meeting back to us once all the questions and comments have been attended to. For those areas where the minister and the department still wants to do further research and so on, you are allowed to do so and give us information at a later stage. Thank you very much, Honourable Minister. Please come in.
Thank you so much, Chairperson, and thank you for the questions from the Honourable Members. Chairperson, with your permission, I would like to invite my DG to respond, and I will come in and provide responses where they would have not provided in detail. Thank you so much. DG?
Thanks, Minister, and thanks, Chair and Honourable Members, for the questions. We do have quite a number of them. I will cover some, and then the CEOs will also come in and cover the other questions. Maybe I'll start maybe from the bottom, or maybe let me start from the first question. I think Honourable... where's my questions now?
Darupen?
Yes, I'm just... my question just disappeared. Yeah, I have taken notes. Yes. The first question was, Honourable Sarupen, yes, on localization and the value chain, how do we work around supporting small businesses to localize? There are parallel processes that we are advising. There is a bigger process that is driven through NEDLAC, where government and big business in particular, they've identified specific products that can be produced locally, and where we're saying SMEs can play a critical role here. So those products have been identified. I think there are 40 products for now, that we are doing what we call import replacement, where retailers, they tell us that these are the products that we are procuring from other countries. We believe that we do have a space to enable local SMEs to supply. And then from our side, then we utilize the Small Enterprise Manufacturing Support Program. to make sure that these SMEs, they do have capacity in terms of getting proper machinery, equipment, technology, if they need technology, but also support them with business development support to meet these requirements. So we do work closely with the big retailers, but on the other hand, within the department, we are also driving, because in terms of the ERP, there is a component that talks to SME-focused localization program, where we are expected to really drive the agenda that beyond just localizing production, we need to make sure that SMEs have a critical role that they are playing in the space. So we do also approach different retailers like Clicks, Pick and Pay, all these big retailers, where we say, can you create a space for products that are produced by small businesses? Obviously, they will also come up with their own requirements, and then we come in as a department and say, we know we can see that you do have some capacity as an SME, but let's assist you to properly package your product. One of the things that has been a challenge for our SMEs in listing the products in these retailers is the issue of the packaging, also the issue of the pricing. So it's important for us as a department to come up with these interventions to make sure that our SMEs, they do proper packaging, but also proper pricing, which is also informed, you know, by the inputs that are put into the production. So that's why we also assist in terms of the raw materials and all these other things, and providing proper equipment. So we do play a role, but we are driving parallel processes to push, especially the agenda of a small business a development.
Chief?
Yes, yes.
Please, can you switch on your video, please?
Okay. Yes, I hope I...
Yeah, we have another.
Yes, and then the second question, I'll skip those that the CEOs will respond to, so that I move quicker. We do have specific figures, Chair. I think the question was from Honorable Kai. So we do have specific figures in terms of the businesses that are owned by women that are supported. We do avail the information if it's requested. Legislative reforms, they are very critical, Chair. We are in the process of reviewing two legislations from the department. One is the National Small Enterprise Act, which was last reviewed in 2004. There we are reviewing it for two purposes. One is the issue of setting up an ombuds office, which is an alternative dispute resolution mechanism. So it also addresses the question that was asked later, whether we are doing any advocacy, because most SMEs are complaining about not being paid on time, big businesses changing contract terms, mid, you know, those contracts. So we're coming up with this alternative dispute resolution mechanism so that our SMEs can have somewhere to go when they have a dispute, even with government departments, because it does happen with government departments that they don't pay SMEs on time. They also don't fulfill the contracts. So we are reviewing that act, which is it's supposed to go to Parliament in February next year. And then the second part, why we are reviewing that act, is to cater for the incorporation of CIFA and the Cooperative Bank Development Agency into CEDA, because there have been these challenges that have been raised by SMEs that they do go to CEDA for support, but when they move from CEDA to CIFA, you know, some of the business plans are not supported. So we are putting together, as directed by Cabinet, that we need to integrate these two entities, but with the addition now of the Cooperative Bank Development Agency, to make sure that we have one entity. It will also reduce, you know, the need for an SME to move from one entity to another, but also there will be this seamless relationship between the two entities, the one that provides financial support and the one that provides non-financial support. But also it will be a bigger reach now, because we will be consolidating these two entities, so they will be able to be located in one office, but also will be able to spread in terms of the district, because we are also aligning ourselves with the district development model, where we are pushing even targets in various districts to make sure that all the districts are covered in terms of our support, because it is always easy, for example, to get applications from urban areas in the, you process those and then you meet your target. But it's also important for us as a developmental state that we also reach those districts that are marginalized. That's why we came up with the Township and Rural Entrepreneurship Program, because we are pushing the agenda there of reaching as many businesses, especially those that are based in township and rural areas. Chair, Honorable Peters did raise a number of questions. One of them is the support that we are providing to home industries. And the Township and Rural Entrepreneurship Program is aimed at addressing exactly that, where we say those businesses that are operating in township and rural areas, they need a specific support intervention, because when they go to commercial banks, they do not get, you know, support from them. So that's why we've designed the scheme, which has a maximum amount of 1 million, and which also is a combination of a loan and a grant. But CEDA, on the other hand, they do provide support in terms of formalizing these businesses, assisting them to do everything that they need to do to prepare them to be ready for funding. So they do assist them with interacting with the municipalities if they need licensing, issues around registration, issues around compliance. So CEDA does provide that support and hold them until they get financial support. And then even post that, there is post-investment support that we are providing to make sure that these businesses do achieve what they're supposed to achieve. It doesn't, the relationship does not end at the time when we provide support. So there is this post-investment support that's provided post the support that has been provided by the department. Then, yes, there is a relationship between ourselves and the provinces. I must indicate here that the other legislation that we're working on, that we are amending, is the Businesses Act, which was last amended in 1991. And that act is the one that talks to the issue of the permits, the issue of the licenses. That responsibility was moved to the provinces. So we are working closely with the municipalities, the provinces, because the issue of issuing of licenses and permits is the responsibility of the municipalities. So we are reviewing this act because we've discovered that there is inconsistencies between various municipalities. As the CEO did, he mentioned that some municipalities, for example, they issue licenses, they give a license for 500 rand, you go to another municipality, you have to pay as much as 3,000 rand for a municipality. And these informal businesses who need these licenses, some of them, they make a profit of between 500 and 3,000 rand. So it doesn't really make sense in terms of the price. So it should also, we are saying, in the reviewing of this act, municipalities should not consider the licenses as another income stream. So the permits and the licenses, the money that SMMEs, informal businesses, are paying should be just for administrative costs. They should not be seen, you know, as a source of income, because that's why other municipalities end up charging these exorbitant prices. So in terms of us, the relationship between ourselves, especially with the DTIC, we work very closely with the DTIC. Even the small enterprise manufacturing scheme that we came up with, we packaged it together. They contributed 200 million when we started this program, because they realized that there is a need really for small businesses to plug this gap and make sure that we have small businesses that are manufacturing. Also under supplier development programs, we had interactions with the BEE Commission here, because we were also talking to the issue of the fund of funds, where the monies that these big corporates are setting aside for enterprise development, they really, because the focus has been unfortunately on skills development, you know, we have not seen any value when it comes to real supplier development. So when people train people and then they count that, you know, as points, and then they get some sort of a better grading just by, you know, getting a consultant to go and train people. So we are saying they need to be real tangible results when it comes to supplier development initiatives. And then under locally produced goods, as I indicated earlier, we have this small enterprise manufacturing scheme, but also working closely with other entities like Proudly South African, because there is a need for us to manufacture these goods locally, but also raise the demand, because there is that biasness, I must say, from the consumer side when they look at there are certain products, brands that they are familiar with. And when it comes to the new ones, you know, they are a little bit suspicious. So we do have a partnership with Proudly South African, where they assist us in terms of the marketing, but also with raising awareness in terms of the products that are produced locally, because even the positioning of these locally produced goods in the retail stores is very critical, because if you put it just behind the other products or in the behind shelves, they will never move these products. So there is an effort that we are making in pushing the and making sure that we publicize it and make sure that people are aware of the locally produced goods. But we know that it's not sufficient. We still need to do more. We need to increase the budget to assist with the marketing of these goods that are produced locally. CEO, I think, will cover the issue of the innovation hubs. We do have quite a number of incubators, but we also have digital hubs, and we also have Center for Entrepreneurship that we are working on with the TVET colleges in particular. There's, through the DDM, we are working closely with quite a number of district champions. In fact, in the department, we've set up, we've asked different colleagues to be district champions so that they work with the municipality. So if a municipality or a district has an inquiry or they need the department to come through, they do have a district champion that they need to talk to within the department. And if there is a need or support that is required from an entity, our district champion is able to go and talk to the entity and say, there is this event, please come through and make a presentation on this and this. If there is a project, you know, that needs finance, we, the district champions are also able to champion those things. So we do work closely. We are fully committed to the district development model. Even the interactions that we're having them at the district level. Even our interventions around red tape reduction, we are driving them through the district development model, because it doesn't help if we go to a specific local municipality and the district is not able to follow up and make sure that the local municipality implements those interventions that are required. I think in terms of those targets, we did not get the presentation from the PBO on time, but in terms of those targets that I think were not measured, I'll just check, but it could be those that are new targets. It's not targets that we could have had in the past. I think colleagues will talk on Honorable Sheikh Imam's questions. Just indicate that definitely we're working with the Department of Labor, Employment and Labor on artisans. They've given us their database, because there are people who are trained technically, but they still need support in terms of business development. So we believe that some of these guys who have technical skills, they will need some sort of training to run businesses, because it becomes a different story altogether when you're doing the work, you know, just as an employee, and when you're doing the work as a business, and you have to do your own administration. You have to know how much to charge. You have to know, you know, what documents you need to have to comply. So there is that engagement, and I think CEO Sita will also talk more on that one. And then we are working with municipalities. The partnership with the municipalities is both on assisting them with their local economic development strategies, because we don't want these LED strategies to just be a tick box exercise where people say, we've got a consultant, they came up with an LED strategy, it's done, target achieved. But we want to have practical strategies that we can intervene as a department and say, in this municipality, these are the successful sectors, these are the small businesses that are operating in this area. This is the kind of support that they are looking for. And then we also intervene in terms of infrastructure support. I think it's one of the areas that has been raised, especially by small businesses that are based in townships and rural areas, where they complain about infrastructure. We have a facility called Shared Economic Infrastructure Facility, where we go, it's mostly 50-50 with the municipality, because we don't want, as a department, to go and set up an infrastructure, and then when you go away, no one takes responsibility for that infrastructure. So when the municipality puts its own resources in that infrastructure, they have to look after it when we are not there, make sure that the people who are utilizing infrastructure, they look after that infrastructure properly, they maintain it, because it's a business center. So it has to be appealing even to the customers. It cannot be that we just set up a government and then go away and no one ensures that that infrastructure is kept proper. I think we have responded to the issues that were raised around the township and rural areas, especially in the small towns, and that we do have a specific scheme that is talking to that. We the minister was there, but maybe she will also talk to the issue of Matadiel. We do have a scheme called the Informal and Micro Enterprise Development Program, where we do provide a support to informal businesses, in particular those who need equipment to run or to improve their business operations. We work closely here with the municipalities, Chair, in terms of identifying these informal businesses. So if your business is not known or is not even registered with the municipality, it becomes impossible for us to reach those businesses. So it's important that the relationship that we maintain with the municipality, because we want, at the end of the day, when we are out of that area, the municipality is able to continue to monitor whether these people are still utilizing the equipment for the business purposes that they applied for. We also need to be able to monitor the impact of this intervention. Chair, we did not cover the issue of the budget because the letter, I think it was mostly talking to the impact and other things. So we did not really utilize this opportunity. I think we should have utilized this opportunity.
DG.
Yes.
You must never leave an opportunity to fight with those acts, ne? Especially are talking to the budget committee appropriations. Okay, Kubegak.
No, no, we'll never miss this opportunity again. We still have an opportunity. I'm sure Minister will also expand on that because there are processes that we are working on. Yes, the budget is not sufficient, but what we're also making sure, Chair, is that we also build capacity for us to be able to spend the budget, because it's always wrong for us as government departments to send money back to National Treasury. So from our side, we push and make sure that we spend as much as possible. For example, our budget for last year, 2021-22, it was 2.7 billion rand. I'm sure you've seen it, 2.27, and then we spent 2.24. We underspend by 23 million. I must indicate, Chair, that the underspending was mostly one on the COE, because what had happened is we had to do a structure and then we had to also delay certain appointments because we had to finalize the structure. So we've just finalized the first structure. The structure that we're operating with has been the startup structure that you normally get when a department is established. So since 2014, we've been operating on this startup structure that is provided by DPSA. So now we are in a process now of moving ahead and filling all those critical positions that needs to be filled. There was also a legal underspending under transfers because of delays in the procurement of certain goods. So the underspending was very, very low in terms of the money that is supposed to reach small businesses. And then there is a significant need to upscale this budget because, for example, we need to expand the work that we are doing around incubation. I'm sure the CEO will talk to that because there is a slide in this that Honorable Kaiso spoke about that talks about insufficient budget. Also, in the small enterprise manufacturing scheme is a very popular scheme. The CEO, I'm sure you'll talk to that. They need more money in that space because we are encouraged that SMMEs are really looking at producing goods locally, and it's a very nice problem to have, that people want really to start manufacturing as many goods locally. Then on the advocacy role, yes, we are pushing this, making sure that SMMEs are paid on time, both by government as well as the private sector. It's a very important issue that you are raising, Chair. We always advocate for that and make sure that those that are not paying on time, we do write accounting officer to accounting officer. We're in the process where also minister is writing to the other ministers just to alert them on this and making sure, because one of the issues that was raised by the AG, even National Treasury, is of consequence management, that we need to make sure that those people who are not paying on time, our SMEs, they do are held accountable for that. We do have a serious interest, especially the agricultural sector. Chair, the Department of Agriculture has really been working with us, even in the master plan that has been finalized recently. We were part of it, and there is a specific section that talks to the work that we're supposed to do together with them in implementing this master plan. In the cannabis sector in particular, we do have a special interest there. We are piloting certain initiatives, but we've been warned in terms of the red tape that has also been identified in the space when it comes to the requirements for people to get these licenses in the first place. We are addressing those. The presidency has an office that is dealing specifically in ensuring that we remove this red tape. So we are having one of the incubators, for example, in the Eastern Cape, that is being looked at so that it can be assist us in driving the initiatives around the cannabis sector. The government spend, Chair, you are correct. We have to really utilize our spend as government to drive support for SMEs. As a department, we had identified 1,000 products that we believe we can start from there as government. We are not here talking about services like security, you know, all those low value, because that's what most people have been doing, that they identify these low value services and products and say SMEs can play in this space. But we want to go to those high value areas as well, where a lot of money is spent, prisons, hospitals, even the manufacturing of the linen and all these things. We say government, as SMEs must be, especially local SMEs, must be assisted to get this. So we are interacting with National Treasury here in terms of the procurement bill. We know that it has taken a little bit long. We had interactions with National Treasury, and we know that it went to NEDLAC. It is of concern. We've been raising this matter that this procurement bill has taken too long for it to be finalized, and it's a very critical instrument, because most of the time when as government we are pushing certain initiatives, we are told that no, this is not legal, you cannot do this. We need, so this procurement bill definitely, Chair, is very, very, very important. In terms of the issue of the license, I think I've covered it, that we are trying to reduce these onerous processes. Because in certain instances, some of the things that we are proposing in the reviewing of this Businesses Act is that where a municipality is failing to issue licenses, it should be deemed, you know, as that business has a license, because it cannot be that as a municipality you fail to do your work, but when the cops they go there, you find that you have all documented truth that you've already applied, but the problem is with the other side, which is the municipality that is not issuing you with a proper license on time. So the issue of the fees as well, and that's what we are addressing with the bills to allow the minister to determine, you know, how much should be the fee to deal with this issue of some of these municipalities seeing these permits and licensing as an opportunity to generate some income. Chair, we started with the issue of the professionals. During COVID in particular, even the doctors, you know, some of them, even during the riots, they were severely affected by the riots.
Recording stopped.
Deep in their buildings, and they've come to us, and we are taking them as professionals, engaging with them so that we can also come up with appropriate intervention. Chair, let me allow
recording in progress.
Allow the CEO to come in. Maybe I've been talking too much here. The recording has stopped. That is, as CEOs, let me allow you to come in. As CEO leader, you can proceed.
Thanks, DJ. Thanks, Chair. I was trying not to have my video on, but I got the instruction, and mainly because of the load shedding. But I hope I'll be audible. If not, then I will switch off the video.
No, Siyabuzo can proceed, the CEO.
Okay, thanks, Chair. The DG has covered most of the questions. The few that I would
Bambat,
We must see you. Students say you appeared before appropriations, but we don't know who this person is.
I understand. Yeah. Or you still fine?
We're still fine. Please continue.
Okay.
If you can drop it, then my
thanks, Chen. I think I'll just quickly cover some of the questions. On the issue of the question around from Honorable Guys on the issue of the value chains and unpacking the value chains and assisting the SMMEs to be able to list their goods or for us to be relevant in terms of goods produced by the locals and those goods finding their way into the wholesalers. I think the DG did cover, but we are working with various wholesalers to the department, but also as an agency, we have our partnerships with the different entities, like your private sector, if we can pay clips where we see some of the products making its way there. But I think the big question is just the impact of that, which we need to measure, and if they are moving as quickly as possible. But there is work that is being done on that. And obviously we use our incubation as well as our normal CEDA model and our partners to make sure that the quality is good of the product that are being supplied. The DG covered the issue of the home industry, street economy and township, which is covered by a TREP. On the issue that he wanted me to cover on the hubs, we've got as a department via CEDA, we've got 20 digital hubs. This is where we're dealing with across the country with the digital the entrepreneurs, where we are able to house them, groom them, and make sure that their concept get to the stage where they are ready for the market. So that's the work that we're doing. We have most of those in the townships. We've been launching most of those. The minister has been launching most of those, and because we are trying to bring that kind of service closer to the SMEs within the townships. We'll continue in the near future to increase those as part of our incubation. We do a lot of work with the centers of entrepreneurship, as well as working with different TVETs, colleges and universities in making sure that we get to the students well, to the students at an early age, and those who want to be entrepreneurs then have an opportunity to get into the space and are able to become entrepreneurs at that point. And apologies for that, Chair. And then we also have our normal incubator that runs in various spaces in the food space, where we're able to assist SMEs that are in the food space with compliance issues, food compliance, all the certificates that are required for their products to be ready for consumption, and so that they're able to access market to put construction incubators. We've got incubators in various spaces as an organization where we're able to take through our economy. But what we've been prioritizing is the innovation, is the digital hubs that we have, so that we make sure that to align ourselves with the economy and with the VIR, so that becomes key. In terms of our budget, there was a question around that question, I think from Honourable Peters. From a CEDA point of view, we always strive for at least 74%, above 70% of our budget to be spent in the provinces. I will link that question, Chair, with the question that you asked. I know the department responded, the DG responded, but if you look at the presentation that was made, I'm sure the Chair noted that the budget of CEDA has not been growing over the years. And or what the department apportions to CEDA, which hovers around 800 and something million annually. With the work that CEDA has been given and the task that we have, especially post-COVID, the unrest, the floods, we definitely need to make sure that so that FIDA is able to support the businesses to remain sustainable, to be able to provide all the training, to be able to handhold these businesses, and to be able to make sure that they are able to make profit and create the jobs and sustain the jobs. That it remains an area of concern, and that's why when I was on the site around CETA, we have mentioned that budget remains an issue. We for the first time in over 5 years in the previous financial year, were able to spend 99.6% of the budget towards providing the SME, the services to the SMEs. We had a surplus last year of 294 million that we came in with, that Treasury gave us back during the third quarter of last year. We were also able to spend that and our normal budget. So that accounts for the 99.6%. So, and that was for the first time in many years. And we are moving on that direction. We don't want not to spend money even going forward. We're managing and monitoring our budget on a quarterly basis very tightly. And we do a reallocation to the provinces that need more money in case some are not moving speed, but we push those who are moving speed to move, so that then there's equal spending across the provinces. So that is one of the projects that one introduced last year when I got to see that at the beginning of the financial year last year. And that seems to be working very well. We definitely do, with the work we're going to do, especially on the cannabis, the incubation there is not going to cost us a small amount of money. There's work being done, and that definitely needs to be funded, as well as the licenses. I mean, we're getting information that some cost as much as, 300K, 200, 500K. This is a new industry, and based on the previous allocations, original allocations, this was not catered for. So we need to cater for that, but we can help our Black SMEs to get into this industry and be able to make money. There is work that is being done. There is an offtake DJ, I think it's from Canada, that we're participating to make sure that we get SMEs ready. But it's going to cost a lot of money to get them to that level. But there's a team from the SNK province and the team of DSPD and CEDA that are working on this work, Chair. And we are watching the space. We want to see success, but definitely it is going to cost us a lot of money. And I think the service access points that we're trying to do, where we're trying to reach out to the rural communities, again, that is a new thing that would definitely need to be funded so that we are available to most outskirts of the country. Chair, on the partnerships that we have with different departments, yes, we do work with different departments, including the CETAs. We're working with, for example, Mercita. We've got some funding from them that they've given us to do training in that space. We got some money from the NSF, the National Skills Fund, to employ 250 graduates that would provide training to 2,500 businesses over the period of 3 years, which is mainly special. And we're working with other departments, for example, in Tshwane, the municipality. They've given us an office there to put our employees, and they pay for that as well. And we've got those across with some of the provinces as well. And some of the department, I know in KZN, for example, would receive, like last year, we received about 3 million from the economic development just for us to be able to do the work of training and mentoring SMEs. So we have quite a lot of partnerships with various departments that we are working in or with. With some municipalities, we've got co-locations where we are able as an organization to send our staff once a day in 2 weeks to go and attend to the SME needs. So there's a lot of work that we are doing in that space, Chair. I think I've covered on that. On the issue that you raised on the impact of load shedding on SMEs, it's a serious issue. I think it's an issue of initially when load shedding started, I know that between CIFA and CEDA, we opted for actually funding from CIFA. We were then giving clients, doing a provision for generators. That used to work very well because the cost of diesel and everything was still low at that time. But now the cost has skyrocketed. So to run that and to still remain profitable, is still a challenge for the SMEs. The generators are no longer a solution we need to look at other means, including solars and everything. But that needs capital. And again, if you're doing a loan for the SMME to do a generator or to do a solar, you are further indebting the SMME. So that needs to be prioritized and needs to be looked at differently from a grant point of view. Those are the discussions that are taking place there. But it's a serious issue, especially for small businesses. You know, the others that are in the shopping centers, big malls, they are fine because some of the malls have the generators, but the majority of our SMEs are not in those spaces. And it affects production. It affects product, the quality of production, because sometimes they're running a production and there's no issue. Sometimes they can't finish on time, the production run, even though they knew that there would be a production, a low shedding, and that affects the quality of what they need to do. I think I've covered most of what the DG didn't cover. Anything you can definitely be able to write and provide the answers. Or the one question that I wanted to just cover in terms of Honorable Sheikh Imam around the support. I think he mentioned the businesses that are in the nail space. If trained and ready, those businesses can access the one of the schemes within the TREP program that talks to hair salons and related products. They will be able to get funding to start their own businesses. But I think the biggest challenge is the support, which is pre and post funding support, which is very, very important. Where we're able to handhold those businesses. I think what we did when we started the TREP program is that because of a lot of COVID, we tried to just keep those businesses surviving and we're able to give them funding. But the right method is to make sure that they are pre-trained, because most of them are not running formal businesses. So the pre-training is now being emphasized, and also the post-funding training is what we are emphasizing and we are holding those businesses. But then even the basic example that was made of profit versus revenue, you know, and all those things, some of the businesses don't know. They think whatever comes in is their money, and that's a fact. And when we teach them the basics of accounting and of costing, it makes a huge difference for their businesses. And that's what we offer under our training and coaching and mentorship at CEDA. It's a big part of the program that we have to. I would leave it there, Chair, and if there's anything that you would let me know. Thank you, Chair, very much, and the members.
Thank you, Mr. Mbata. Is anything from DG? Anything from your side? I want to go to PBO now. Can I?
CEO CEDA is on the platform. CIFA, sorry.
Okay. CIFA, please come in.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honorable Members. I'm not sure whether I'm audible and visible, Chair, from the side of the...
You are both. You may proceed. Thank you very much. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair. There was a question, Chair, that was raised around the COVID interventions and the numbers that were actually higher in 2020-2021 on the number of SMEs and jobs. I think it came also from the PMO. I just wanted to explain one trend, Chair, that before COVID, members will realize that the numbers of jobs created were around 70 to 80,000. Because of the COVID-19 interventions that the department rolled out together with CIFA and CEDA, those numbers jumped to 200,000 plus. Then now that we're going back to what I'll call normalcy, the numbers are going back to your pre-COVID numbers. So those numbers of 200,000 plus were spiked by the COVID interventions that we're rolling out to the department. Now we're going back to the baseline of the pre-COVID-19 numbers. The issue of how many South Africans and Africans were funded, the point is of CIFA, we don't fund non-South Africans. we only fund businesses that are 100% owned by South Africans. We are also quite strict for those what we call naturalized South Africans, because we banned chairperson and members, our fingers in that regard. For example, we funded one Zimbabwean in Kelvin, Johannesburg, some time back, 12 million rand loan, married to a South African, had a house which we actually used as collateral of about 2.5 million rand. One day, this fellow just packed his bags, left the house, the wife and the children, and then with the money. And now we are quite strict that if you are a natural South African, you need to give us more security, because that's a risk we face when it comes to mainly your naturalized South Africans. But our focus, Chair, is businesses that are 100% South African owned. How many women were funded in the portfolio, including youth, women, and disabled? Chair, as covered in the presentation, those numbers only speak to what you call your trap as requested. The number of the approvals actually that we had over this period was 822 million. And we dispersed 737 million. The number of SMEs that were funded were about 12,000, which created about 17,000 jobs. Now, the out of the chair, the disbursement of 737 million, 342 million went to women-owned businesses, and 263 million went to youth-owned businesses, and 4.4 million went to businesses owned by disabled people, and 351 million went to businesses that are located in the townships, and 281 million share went to businesses that are located in the rural areas. So I would like to flag, Chair, that we have one of our targets is what we call designated groups, that being women, youth, and people with disabilities. So we measured actually on our performance on how we deliver around those targets. And so far, Chair, we're meeting those targets as the numbers will show. There was also another number. For example, this is now just TREP numbers, Chair. The number of SMEs that we funded for the year, Chair, that ended in March 2022, this year, the financial year, we funded 76,129 SMEs. And that resulted for that year in 96,589 jobs. So we do what we call prioritize really those, because those are the key measurements that we get measured as we actually provide funding, Chairperson. And then informal sector support, the DG and my colleague from CIFA spoke to that, CIDA rather. During COVID-19, Chair, the department introduced a package, not COVID rather, during the violence in KZN and some parts of Gauteng. The department introduced a scheme that was designed to support informal businesses. And we provided support to those informal businesses that were affected by violence. And now we're looking, Chair, and in discussions with the department, whether we should proceed with this program of providing support to informal businesses. We've got now a pipeline of about 7,000 applicants from the informal sector. And we were in discussions with the DG to see whether this program should not only be an intervention for what we call the violence that occurred, but it should be a program that we should continue providing the financial support to informal businesses. And then in that process, we're engaging also the municipalities and the associations of these informal businesses to see how do we formalize them, because it's easier where there's an element of formalization in that sector. So we did provide support, and we still continue, Chair, in that regard. The funding, how is it spread throughout the provinces and districts? Chair, we, for each province, we've got a budget that is allocated for the year. And but what you'll find, Chairperson and members, is that the uptake of loans in Gauteng, Western Cape, and KZN urban, not rural part. That is the urban side of KZN, Durban, Maritzburg, and surrounds, is very high. But with the other poorer provinces, the uptake is lower. And that is driven really by the level of concentration of SMMEs in those areas where we find that there's a high demand for an uptake of the what we call of the loans in those areas. So we measure even that performance capacity to ensure that we are aligned. The CEO of CEDA spoke chairperson about the issue of post-investment support. We do provide post-investment support to our businesses, particularly the ones that have taken loans from CIFA, so that we ensure that one, these businesses are sustainable, and two, we protect the money that they would have dispersed actually to these businesses. So we have a division that we call post-investment support and restructuring. I did speak to the question chair that spoke to how many businesses were funded, and I stated that up to end March 2022, we funded 76,129 businesses. That gave us those 96,589 jobs. Why don't you fund property development, chair? We do fund property development that are actually backed by what I'll call contracts, particularly in commercial businesses. What we don't find is what we call speculative property development, because that is really pure speculation. But we funded a couple of businesses that are in the space of providing residential accommodation for the students, and also the developments of backroom flats in the townships. And we also do fund a lot of retail developments for businesses. But what we don't finance is your speculative property developments. From the credit guarantee side, Chair, we do have the oldest, by the way, credit guarantee agency within CIFA, the Kula Credit Guarantee Scheme. And we've seen a good performance, Chair, in that regard. And what it has shown us that through the use of KCG, we are able, Chair, to unlock the balance sheets of the banks. Given the fiscal challenges that we face as a country, crowding in those banks is one of the best interventions that we believe as government we need to continue actually rolling out. For example, Chair, in the year ended March 2021, we extended credit guarantees to the commercial banks to the tune of about 201 million. And in return for that, Chair, the banks extended funding to SMMEs to the tune of about 1.3 billion, which gave us a multiplier effect of 6.25. For the year ended March this year, we actually extended a funding to the banks, which gave us a 6.38 multiplier effect to the tune of 1.40 billion, Chair. So what it shows, really, and our credit guarantee, Chair, is slightly different from the one of the Treasury. We are strict on the conditionalities that we put, that we prioritize SMMEs, and those SMMEs must be Black-owned. And the banks are executing that. We are not participating too much on the Treasury one. We're still engaging the National Treasury on how can we as the DFI participate, because the way it's structured currently doesn't work for us, because we can't borrow money, Chair, from the banks, and then in return, we guarantee the banks. It doesn't make financial sense. So the model that we're using is the one that is actually giving us the desired results, and it's performing, Chair, if you ask me. The Small Enterprise Manufacturing Support Program, Chair, is one of our most popular products in the institution, and we've seen the growth in that book. We approved about 657 million, which gave us about 68 SMMEs, which were 3,156 jobs. It speaks, Chair, to that issue of localization and also trying to grow our manufacturing base. But we've seen the book that is struggling a lot during COVID and post-COVID, and we understand that the manufacturing sector was negatively affected by those economic shutdowns that were linked to COVID-19. But we anticipate that going forward, the book will improve as the economy picks up. I felt I needed to cover those areas, and thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, CEO, for the input. PPO, quickly, as I said, that we were always together here, but please come in quickly if there are areas that you would like us to respond to or emphasize on. Dr. Ted. Nelia.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't think there was much for us. And the only one that I think the DG already answered the question about, there was no historic information in terms of basically all the indicators and targets, because they've developed new indicators and targets for the ATP as well as the CEDA, I think. CIFA did give historic information, but the other two did not give any historic information. So that's basically, I think DG already answered that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Dr. Nelia. Anything from PPO before I proceed?
Sorry, Chairperson, I think we have a lot of our areas that have up, and like you said, we'll continue to take. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Let me go back to the oral minister. Minister, can you please make your remarks, responding and making your concluding remarks before I come in, Honourable Minister.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. And let me appreciate the comments and responses that have been provided by our officials. I just want to talk to a few issues. Chairperson, that have been raised, but I just want to highlight them. On the issue of the value chains, some of the honourable members asked in relation to localization, in relation to ensuring that SMM is participate throughout the value chain, whether we talk about the general dealers, the spaza shops, including the question that was asked of the pick and pays that have access to the townships. What we are doing to enhance the efforts of the department, honorable members. The first thing was to say there's a need for us to change how we've been doing things. We are moving away from a scenario where we're just doing things as a department to a scenario where we are taking an ecosystem approach, which means we recognize what is within our capabilities. We recognize also what our partners have, and therefore be able to say, how do we join hands in this? As a result, we are establishing an ESD platform, which will be formed by ourselves in terms of the public and the private partnership grouping. Here we are saying, because out of the 3% that is expected as a contribution from the BBBE companies, it's supposed to come to enterprise supplier development. If you look at it as things stand, this is the money that is spent in the urban areas, but also mainly they focus on particular training. In other areas, it doesn't talk to core of the business. This is the first thing that we identified to say. We need to really try to leverage on the existing instruments that are in place before we talk about other monies that we need. So we're engaging the industries that are involved. We have proposed also to cabinet that out of that 3%, we request that at least 30% be put aside for specifically township and rural businesses. 15% on the other side, 15%, so that it doesn't focus only on urban areas. But this 15% that must be put there, it must go in the core of the business. If we're taking mining, we're not saying the 3% must be spent on other perennial issues. We are saying it must be what you need as a company, so that these people, as those who put through this program, they're able to benefit in the value chain and the supply chain that is driven by the companies. So we will be establishing that. And in relation to your question about the budget and all of that, Chairperson, yes, if I'm talking about this, there's 18 billion rand worth, if you look at the 20% contributions on ESG that are meant to be deployed in this program. But for us to leverage the 30% of that, we need to match whatever rand they are bringing. This is why we have made a request. We are submitting a request to National Treasury to say we need at least about 10 billion rands that must go to CIFA, as we have had the CIFA CE explaining on the importance of recapitalizing the KCG, which is the credit guarantee component of CIFA. And it will have, if you look at the economic recovery and reconstruction plan, government is going to spend lots of money on infrastructure. And if the SMMEs are to participate, it means they must have access to funding. So these are monies that we are saying, government already, you have this budget that you're going to spend. All we are saying, help us make our SMMEs ready by having access to finance. Not only us as CIFA, but we are partnering with others that will come on board. So we really need that money, and your support on that will be really appreciated. We are again looking at CIDA and CIFA, as you are aware, honorable members, that we are working on merging CIFA, CIDA, and the CBDA. This we do because we want to provide a one-stop center for the SMMEs. Whether you look at the non-financial support or at the financial support, SMMEs must be able to find those services in one agency. We have said as part of looking at the new products that must be offered, not really new, actually, some of the products that were there, but we did away with. We've looked at bringing them back. If we are to enhance the localization that the DG was referring to, that targets light manufacturing, whether we're going to be talking about energy and all the other components that require us to invest in localization. And those ESG programs, as I said, will also give an opportunity to ensure that the products that are produced in those will really find expression. But we'll have a CIDA, which is a new agency that will bring that capability so that we don't have people who are advocating over automotive, whatever, over manufacturing, but do not have the expertise that is expected to run that. Because this is what makes the private sector to say, no, your quality, no, this and that, we can't bring our money on board. So as we engage with them, we have then said, we are considering bringing this on board, and therefore they will bring the resources that they have to bring. Another focus on the DDM, honorable members, as part of improving what the DG said, was the DG made reference to the district champion. These are directors of things then. They have their own responsibilities in their department. And it has been evident when we went to the district roadshows that they couldn't be hands-on and provide the necessary information that we require, because they must also carry out their responsibilities. We've since directed the department through the DG and his team to say, let's appoint, even if it's for temporarily, whilst we're trying to see how can we get to make this permanent, appoint the district development coordinator. But we do that at a district level, we'll have a sense of what is happening at that level. Because one of the things that have weakened our state in growing and transforming the economy is the lack of alignment or integration in the plans from local government, the provincial government, and ourselves. Therefore, if we have those people dedicated in that region, there will be our liaison between all those spheres of government.
Can I ask everybody else to mute the minister? Honorable members, everybody. Honorable members, please.
Thank you,
Minister. Please continue. Sorry for that.
That's fine. Thank you. So these district coordinators will therefore be able to rally that information from the LED units, because at local level, we work with the local economic development units, district level, and then up to the provincial level. Now, if we have economic development strategies that are aligned, it therefore tells that even in our products that we design as a department, they will be responsive to each and every district. And as I said, we'll be putting warm bodies that will be following up on that work. We have also picked up, as we engage on the roadshows, that the capacity or the capability in the LED office is of concern. Many of them, they don't understand what needs to be done, and this is what they have confirmed themselves and indeed requested support that we can provide. We have, working with COGTA, we have also requested the National School of Governance to at least design an LED course that must help them have an appreciation of what is it that is expected of LED officers and managers. We believe that with that training, that it will make things easy for us as we work towards getting everything coordinated. We are collaborating with various departments, at the Department of Basic Education on school infrastructure, which Minister Mutsega was anticipating around 4 billion rand if National Treasury approves. And we said specific, that money that must be given to SMEs. Again, honorable members, if that is to happen, if National Treasury agrees, it means that then our agencies must be capacitated with finances so that they can be able to provide the support. We do not want a situation where people say, we've given an opportunity to small businesses, but they cannot deliver, or they delivered poor quality. So that's one thing that we said our interventions must focus on, enhancing our business development support, whilst we also ensuring that they are market ready and bankable as they go to access the finances procedure. We're working also with the Department of Higher Education and Training in looking at the school residents to say, let certain things be given to the SMEs. Same applies to the Department of Labor and also other artisans that Udiji spoke about, including some professionals, because one of the things that make our SMEs not to be able to access financing, especially on incentives, is because they are not compliant. Compliance in this country is very costly, honorable members. This is why we are saying, whilst we're engaging all the stakeholders that are involved in this ecosystem, in the meantime, where we can find each other by trying to sign MOUs, let that happen. Like the issue Gigi was talking about of the licenses, we are engaging all municipalities. We are set to present now to the NEC of SAUGA in order to engage all the postcard principals to see how can we sign whilst we're still trying to follow the process of the legislative amendment. We do request that the honorable members also please enhance utilizing your constituency offices, including your relations, to make sure that we can also work together in saying we don't have to wait for the legislation. These are the things that we all agree that they need to be in place if SMEs are going to do what they're supposed to do. We are awaiting a meeting between police and correctional services. Another question was asked, how are we collaborating with them in order to make sure that small businesses participate in their value chain? Minister Lamula has committed to a meeting wherein we're identifying, because they've identified products that are going to be down in-house. They're insourcing some of the products. But we did say that you can insource some because they want to cut costs, but that shouldn't be at expense of the small businesses. We could be the ones that supply whatever. If you need flour, if you need to bake bread, you can bake your bread, but you can provide with flour and other things. We are engaging again with the big corporates, like the question that was asked on Pick and Pay that goes to townships. This is a program that the department had apparently approved and agreed to in terms of working with Pick and Pay. But we are engaging other cooperatives in the retail, like your Tiger Brands, to say how best can we come forward and join hands by giving an opportunity to those African township businesses that are in those areas that they may be able to buy at the same price that Pick and Pay sources products from them. And we are likely to meet the CEOs now. We've met with the other teams. Now the outstanding meetings with the CEOs, but there is a possibility of an agreement that we may reach. And we made mention, another honorable member made mention of the program in Matatiel and how other SMEs were not aware. Unfortunately, this is the reality, honorable members. The information we put at the same place where people have access to. We advertise there, we refer everyone to municipality. It is information that is even available on our social media pages, except the website, but also when you walk in on our CEDA offices and the energy offices, as I said, because specifically this one of the IMED that we're talking about, people submit applications in the energy offices. That's where people are at. So as much as we have those everywhere that we travel, we hand over to those that have applied. And we always say, please submit your application to be considered for the next term. And we said the same in Matatia. Yesterday, we delivered to 31 beneficiaries, while previously in Matatia, we had delivered to 104. So just Matatia alone, we supported about 135 in this financial year. If you look at also our relief funds of the floods that happened and the disasters, we again, we have committed about 10 point, we have processed up to 10.5 million in Alfonso and Majadiel stands to benefit. If I'm correct, CE, you will correct that. I think they said it's about 6 million or so that is benefiting just from Majadiel. And there are other informal traders that stand to benefit from those processes. Chairperson, allow me to pause there and say, as I conclude, that we are really in need of support when it comes to budget. You did ask how much goes to small businesses in this country out of the billions that you appropriate in parliament, actually the trillions. Let me tell you, Honorable Chair, you only get 1% as SMEs. I'm not saying the department. I'm saying as SMEs in South Africa, government only procures 1% of the expenditure. And this is something that I'm calling upon yourselves to say, help us intervene. And the other issue of the disintegration of all these funds, which at times leads to the double dipping, because the systems are not integrated. At municipal level, they have agencies. At provincial level, they have agencies that are funding SMMEs, national, we fund, GTIC, national treasury, mang does that. And that also causes confusion in the same constituency, because we do not come up with the same criteria that must then say, even if we're going to have NEF funding, but this is where NEF plays, and this is where our department plays, just like other provinces. We continue to engage with the provinces. We continue to engage with National Treasury and GTIC. Actually, at the center is National Treasury's willingness to understand the importance of one coordinated pool of funds with specific tasks that can be split. Chairperson, allow me to pause there. Thank you so much.
On that note, again, thank you to Small Business Development FMEDI, as represented by the minister here, the DG, and the CEOs. Thank you very much. No doubt, it was a very much worthwhile engagement, and you have shared a lot of information with us. So let me just start about information sharing using an example of Matatiel, and I'm sure many other places. You may already be using this, and all that I'll say that please also factor in your community radio stations as information distributors. But again, these are also small businesses. They are within your mandate. Usually these small community radio stations, they don't get adverts from government and so forth. So I'm just saying one area that you may also want to look into. And also agree with the with the sentiment that you have just articulated of what I call silo approach, both vertically and horizontally in terms of our funding, the left hand not knowing what the right hand is doing, and as a result we end up having least impact as government and our institutions in as far as funding is concerned. I think at the executive level, Rural Minister, as the champion of small business, try to pull everybody along so that the sector that you are responsible for gets a maximum impact. This thing of small business funding, BE funding, it's a big problem, and perhaps this is directed to us, honorable members, and I think we must take it up. We, as government generally, we must walk the talk. Wherever we stand on public platforms, we talk about the role of small business, the need to transform the economy, the need for inclusive economic growth, and so on. But we don't put our money where our mouths are. The figure that the minister is sharing with us, it's disappointing to say the least. I can use a stronger word, but let me use this one. It's disappointing to say the least. Minister, you would have heard that when we're dealing with the understanding, the institutions which are underspending by 17 billion rand, the SOEs which are underspending by 14 billion rand, yet you are having a sector which is very important for the growth of our economy, which is so underfunded. I'm saying this to 14 billion rand underspending, 17 billion rand underspending. And having a department like yours, which have only underspent by 1.3%, if my calculation is correct, you are 98.7% spending, and people still need more money. The budget of 2.27 billion rand, or members, seriously, I think we need to do something about it. Minister, so from our side, as the committee would like to work with you and try to correct this, not just for the institutions which are under you, but for even other institutions which may be under other departments, but dealing with the very same sector. This one person thing is just not working. And I think again, even that 1%, looking at our budget, maybe an exaggeration, it may even be lesser than that. So we let's commit to doing that. We'll do that not just because we like your department, perhaps we do, but because of our understanding of the role that the department should be having with your institutions. The reasons are both political and historical, which we all know. If you are the majority of the businesses which are in this sector, are black businesses, mainly African businesses, the women-owned businesses, the township businesses, which have been on the receiving end of all the apartheid policies. So political and historically, we have got a responsibility as this government to make sure that we make funds available to them. But again, economically, when it comes to small business, they have shown that in fact all the economies that have grown, they've grown because this sector has been very, very active. The economic reason is that small businesses, amongst other things, the what you'll call propensity to reinvest profit is very high to them. See, if you you make a profit of 500,000 rand, let me say that per annum, the chances are that you are going to reinvest that money and want to make 750 the following year. Big business, when they make a profit of 1 million rand, the chances are that it's going to hold that money, is not going to reinvest in the economy. No wonder that across fixed capital formation in this country is amongst the lowest in the world, around 12% of the GDP. Although our plan says that we should be going to 30% of GDP, so we're around just 12%. So there's no reinvestment to the economy, and it shows the type of the economy that we're having, that is run by big business. We have got no appetite to reinvest, with the known negative consequences of lower economic growth, lower employment creation. So I'm then saying again, why must we support this business, small businesses, or members? We should deal with the over concentration of business, the monopolies and oligopolies in our country, which is a big problem. So, and we can't do that without money. I'm throwing all these things, Honorable Minister, your team, PBO, because I'm saying these are the reasons that we should advance as we argue for more resources to this sector. As I said at the beginning, putting a man where our mouths are. And from our side, Honorable Minister, lead that, and would like to have
a meeting with your good friends, with Treasury, as we did with MTBS, and deal with this issue. I'm happy you have raised it. And that's why I was saying to DG, DG, you can't talk about your department and you don't talk about underfunding as it were. Because there's so much expectation, Minister, from your department to deal with all those things. But let's make sure that we start trying to grow towards getting a better budget for the department. I think I'm speaking on behalf of the honourable members and CEO Sifa. I think one of the things with us is that we don't want to learn from what has worked for us. For instance, when we came up with the credit guarantee scheme, we never referred to the cooler credit as a scheme, as it were. And as you were saying, that you have been able to leverage a lot of private money using this scheme. But I don't think there's anyone who came to you. As this committee has been saying, can the DFIs be brought into this? But obviously, let the product work for small businesses. And from where I am, you have just suited to guide how the scheme must work so that we're able to get the maximum benefits and maximum output from it. So I like your input as far as what you have been able to achieve. Minister, I must say that I do have a little bit of history with Kula. Most of you in the platform, I don't think you had started school. I'm amongst the first directors of Kula. So I'm happy to hear that there are things that are working from that institution. With those words, Minister, your team, thank you very much for taking time. I know it's a busy time for all of us, but to take time and with your full bench and engage us. This takes us to the end of that agenda item by your good self. Thank you, PBO. As I said, you know, Doc, Janchis and Nelia and the team, we are still going to meet very, very, very soon. That takes care of this agenda item. You may be excused, but as a transparent committee, if you want to remain with us for the remainder of the meeting, you are still welcome to do so. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Minister. Honourable members, the next agenda item I want to to put it to you, the minutes of the 9th of September 2022 were sent to us. Can I remove her for the adoption of the minutes? Other members?
I move, Chair Kaiso.
Honorable Kaiso moves for the adoption. Seconder? Honorable members, Honorable Peters, second. So can we go to the minutes of the 9th of September 2022? Honorable members, can you go to the minutes of the 13th of September 2022? Move on.
13th September.
Honorable Kaiso moves, seconder.
Peters,
minutes of the 13th of September, duly adopted. Darren, do you have any announcements? When is our next meeting? Maubane? Maubane?
Yes, good afternoon, Chair and members. The next meeting will be on Tuesday. We are meeting with the Department of Forestry and Environment at 9 o'clock. The link will be sent in due course.
Thank you so much, sir. Honourable members,
I just as a closing remark from my side, I think that's, you see, this thing of small businesses, there's just no funding for them. And there's our saying that departments and SOEs are able to underspend with billions and billions of rands, but we are not supporting what we say will be. So I think we need to put our foot down here with National Treasury. Let's engage them. I'll be happy to take suggestions from your good friends. Okay. That was my closing remark, honorable members. And thank you so much for taking time on a Friday and dealing with this very important matter. This brings us to the end of this meeting, and may I take this opportunity to wish you a very good and safe weekend. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Long live the Chair.
Thank you to you all.
Thanks, Jared.